order the Facilities Subcommittee of the Public Commission on the Oregon Legislature. And good morning, everyone. Welcome to the committee. Those who are in attendance today, thank you, and those who are watching on video, and I presume that is happening. We'll find out more about that in just a moment. I'd like to welcome the members of our committee today. Gary Wilhelm's here, and Sheriff Ro Ramirez. Sheriff, welcome. Representative Wayne Krieger is here. Wayne, good to have you. Thank you. And also by telephone today, Mark Garber is joining us, and he is a member of this committee. I'd like to restate the purpose of this committee as we get going today, and that is the franchise we've been given is to really analyze the Capitol facility, technology issues, safety issues, security, anything that deals with brick and mortar and technology. And all of that has to relate to improving the legislature or the legislative process. We have been told that the legislature has problems, real, and perhaps some of them are perceived. And so whatever we want to do here, whatever we do accomplish in this committee, we want to stay on task and make sure it relates to improving the legislative process. There may be some out there who believe that the whole purpose of this is to make it easier for legislators, and that's not what the situation is. If that happens in this process, and by easy I mean making it more efficient, that's terrific, and that's great. But we want to remember the citizens of the state of Oregon who want to be a part of this process and who need to know what goes on in this building. We need to keep those things in mind as we do our work here. So it should be a stimulating time. Rather than just simply brick-and-mortar issues, we're going to get into what I think is the future of the legislature as it relates to the public at large, and that is the electronic media. As I get moving today, I just wanted to share a couple of ideas. I think the Capitol building is always going to be important in this process because it is obviously the house of the people, and this has traditionally been a gathering point for people all over the state to come and see their legislature and their government in action and to be able to deliver testimony. But I have a feeling that in just a few short years, and maybe even less than that, people are going to find that they are able to deliver live testimony to the legislature from all points of the compass in Oregon, from Lakeview to LeGrand to Brookings to Astoria. People are going to be able to deliver live testimony from where they are and no longer have to trek to this building to do it. I think as we look at the changes in technology in our country today, with video and other things, that traveling to Salem to deliver live testimony is going to be a thing of the past for most of Oregonians. But yet we have issues that I think we have to relate to that are going on in this building today, and that is the mechanisms that we use to get the word out and to take the word in undoubtedly have to be known better by us and have to be improved to deal with the situation as it currently stands. And so we want to keep an eye on the immediate future and keep an eye on the horizon. And to do that, hopefully over time, we'll collect all the certified smart people here to tell us all the things that we need to know, both about today and what is going to come in the future. I do think that that communications will be one of the great changes we see in the future here in the next couple of years. So we want to try to get a feel for how we can begin to set the legislature up for that kind of change. We're obviously going to be getting into security issues and physical plant issues here as well. But today I thought we'd go ahead and kick off with technology because that is probably going to be the issue that may be harder to get our hands around than any other thing. With that said, I just want to ask the members of the committee, and Gary, we might start with you, any comments on what I've said or plans that you'd like to see us undertake here, and we'll move this direction.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you're right on target. As one of the co-chairs of the overall commission, we've had a little head start on some of the folks in trying to organize, if you will, our process and get our arms around the issues and working with staff. What are we up to now, Marjorie? Over 190 proposals?
About that, but we're consolidating down.
Good. But we've had the opportunity to look at some of these proposals and to brainstorm some, and I think you're right on target, Mr. Chairman. I couldn't agree with you more.
Excellent. Thank you.
I think your priority of starting out with technology first is a good one as well.
Great. Thank you. Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The issue of looking at bringing the state and the legislature into modern times, is, if I may use that term, technology is moving at such a rapid pace that I think this is an opportunity where we can support not only the leadership here at the Capitol, but also, as you stated, make it provide easier access to our citizens that they don't have to travel to the Capitol to be able to provide testimony and be involved. And this is an opportunity for us to not only look at how can we create an efficient system, but also be looking at the issue of security. And again, we want to not restrict access, but at the same time protect those that are here. We had a recent incident not too long ago here at the Capitol that compromised security, and I think that's at the forefront as we look not only at the safety of those that work here, but also as the public that tours the facility. So look forward to the work of the committee.
Thanks, Sheriff. And Representative Krieger.
I think most has been said, but I would also agree. And I can remember the first weeks coming into this building and just driving into the basement. And there's trucks going in and out, people who you didn't know. There's no cameras, no security, no gate, no nothing. And I asked Senator Mesner, I says, well, how do you keep track of who's in, or what if there was some type of a threat? There was nothing in place 6 years ago at all. It was unbelievable. And though this is the building, and we want to make it that access, a public access, very free and open, the first severe incident we had, that will change, and we need to prepare what is it we can do to prevent that incident to start with without becoming, you know, too tight and lock the door, so to speak.
Okay. Thank you. Mark Garber, appearing by telephone today. Mark, any comments?
Well, I guess I'm sort of living proof that having that access is important from a distance. And having spent several years out in Pendleton, I can say that when people had to travel to Salem to give testimony, it was quite a hardship. And I think that's the one thing that we can do to open up the process to more Oregonians and make them feel a tighter connection to the legislature. And I also wholeheartedly agree on the security issues. You know, if you think we're, what, 10, 12 years since Oklahoma City, and we all hope that nothing ever would happen like that in Salem, but still I think, balancing that feeling that it is a public building and open to the citizens, but also providing the level of security to the building. Both of those are important issues.
Thank you, Mark. I agree. Thank you. First testimony today, I'd like to call forward Bill Gross, Legislative Media. Bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission. For the record, I'm Bill Gross, Legislative Media Supervisor. And yes, indeed, we are televising this hearing this morning, and I believe even our local cable public access channel, CCTV, here in Salem is also hearing our broadcast as well. Before I dive into our analysis project that we conducted, first I'd like to give you a little bit of background about my department and give you an idea of what we do here in the Capitol. First off, some history. The history of our department actually goes all the way back to 1968, when back then the Advisory Committee on the Oregon Legislature recognized the potential use of television coverage and recommended camera equipment be installed in the Capitol. And since then, the legislature has been steadily improving its television infrastructure, and in fact, Oregon's Capitol today is probably better equipped than most other states in terms of its internal television infrastructure. So today we have four full-time staff, including myself, and during session we hire two session staff to help out with our coverage. We have 50 television cameras in service here in the building, including three in this room. All of our production activity is coordinated from our media control room, where many of our cameras can be controlled remotely, and in fact, later on this morning, you'll have a chance to tour our control room and see what we do down there. Now, inside the Capitol, viewers can watch just about any public legislative event live. Every televised location here in the Capitol has its own dedicated TV channel on our closed-circuit cable system. We have the House and Senate chambers televised, 12 hearing rooms, including this one, news conferences, both in the Capitol press room and the governor's ceremonial office, and special events around the Capitol as well. Some of the other services we provide include we maintain all the audio systems in the building. We also create some educational video productions about the legislative process that we make available to schools and visitors to the Capitol. We also provide television viewing for audience overflow, in particular when hearing rooms are at capacity. We can route our television coverage to other locations throughout the building. We facilitate access to our television coverage for the television and radio news media that have offices in the Capitol press room. And a big service we provide is we make DVD and VHS duplications of our coverage as well. Now, televising the legislature to people inside the building is the easy part. The challenge, really, is making it widely available to citizens across the state. Some of the efforts that we've done to distribute our content vary across the board, including good old-fashioned tapes that have been mailed out to cable public access channels and even sent out on Greyhound buses. We've also sent out satellite feeds on the old EdNet satellite system, and unfortunately that system is no longer in existence today. We also do internet streaming on the legislative website, and we definitely would like to expand our streaming capabilities on the website, but internet streaming also has its limitations. To really watch our television coverage on the internet, you really need broadband access to watch video on the internet, and right now only about 30 to 35% of Oregonians have broadband access. And then our most ambitious effort has been a pilot project that we've conducted with Oregon Wireless Instructional Network, the Oregon Public Affairs Network, and Cable Public Access Channels, which we started about 4 years ago, and I'll give you some details on that. Our pilot project targets Cable Public Access Channels, also known as PEG channels. And for this pilot, our department has been providing a 24-hour feed that originates out of our control room. And the Oregon Public Affairs Network has been creating a nightly two-hour edited program that includes our content as well as some other public affairs content such as lectures and debates and things of that nature. The pilot reaches about 400,000 households, so there's a pretty good reach out there. And we've also gotten a lot of positive feedback from viewers and PEG channels and even members of the television radio news media. A lot of them actually record content off our feed. If they don't have time to come down to Salem to cover a story, they'll grab a soundbite or two off our feed, and it helps them to actually cover the legislature. However, the pilot also revealed some limitations and challenges. For one thing, PEG channels can't devote really enough airtime to facilitate gavel-to-gavel coverage. PEG channels have their own programming commitments. They have to cover their own city council meetings and county commission meetings, and they have to prioritize their coverage, so they just don't have enough airtime really to dedicate an entire channel really to our content. Access is limited also on PEG channels to you have to have cable. Only cable subscribers can watch it. And also only a few PEG channels receive the feed, and it's primarily in the Portland, Salem, and Eugene metro areas. With we also recently, during session, extended that down to Southern Oregon with a broadband internet feed that's carried by a PEG channel down there. So, why do we conduct this project? First of all, the distribution pilot project ended, and there's no funding available or allocated to continue this from any of the partners, really. Also, OPAN's fundraising efforts haven't been able to reach the level of being able to build out a statewide television distribution network. And so we wanted to work with legislative leadership, really, to determine what are is really truly the best way to distribute our television coverage to the masses here in Oregon. So here's a look at our project objectives. First off, we wanted to define our legislative business requirements for distribution, research all technologies and methods, identify potential partners, and finally recommend an appropriate solution for the legislature. Our project business requirements, we met with our project team, which was made up of representatives from the leadership and caucus offices, and in fact, Commissioner Wilhelms was one of them. And we basically wanted to know what their expectations were for distribution and what do they expect to see in their living rooms when they watch the legislature. And it wasn't necessarily coming up with a list of technical requirements, but more of a list of vision statements about what they expect to see from distribution. And some of those requirements include the ability to carry unedited gavel-to-gavel coverage, ability to carry live coverage. Distribution should be widely available, and the technology should not severely limit access. And a 24/7 Oregon channel would be an ideal programming platform to carry legislative content. So technologies considered in this project. We looked at satellite distribution technology, both commercial satellite and consumer DBS satellites, such as the Dish Network and the DirecTVs. We looked at microwave distribution, looked at fiber, we looked at the Internet, and we looked at digital television broadcasting. We also wanted to assess various partnerships to see where resources could be shared in distribution. We've been talking with our state's public broadcasting stations, Oregon Public Broadcasting and Southern Oregon Public Television. We've talked to cable television providers in the state. We've talked to both the largest providers, and we've also talked to some of the small mom-and-pop organizations out there. We've talked to state agencies to see what kind of infrastructure might be available out there. And we've, of course, talked with our pilot project partners. All of the discussions were informal, but very revealing. We found most people are definitely eager to provide what support they can, but resources are very scarce. We also want to do some content assessments only so far as the possibility of attracting partners to distribution and augmenting our content on a 24/7 television channel. We surveyed state agencies and found a lot of interest in potential content from the other branches of government. However, very little resources exist on their side to provide production services. And there's potential non-government public affairs content, of course, that have been continuously provided by the Oregon Public Affairs Network. Next, we wanted to find out how do Oregonians watch television. And we found some interesting statistics here. 60% subscribe to cable television. 20 to 21% subscribe to direct broadcast satellite, the DirecTVs and the Dish Network type of companies. About 20 to 30% watch over-the-air television broadcasts. And interestingly, almost 2% have no television, which is a national average. There is some overlap here because some households actually have more than one form of access. You might be subscribing to cable, but you may have a television set in the kitchen that's over the air. Now, these statistics become very important because you'll notice there's no one outlet here that really dominates coverage for Oregon. Any one of them leaves out a big portion of the populace. So the trick was when we went through this project is there a solution out there where we can perhaps capture more than one of these outlets for television coverage. Distribution efforts in other states. This effort is certainly nothing new, and several states have successful C-SPAN style television networks. Some of them include TVW in Washington State that we spoke with, CTN in Connecticut, the Ohio Channel, PCN in Pennsylvania, the California Channel. We found most of these distribute their content statewide via commercial satellite, which is distributed to their cable operators around the state. Although many of these organizations actually started out small with a limited distribution, similar to our efforts currently. Okay, typical costs incurred by other state television networks. It's interesting, last week the Institution Committee asked me what some typical costs are, and I gave them some typical costs incurred by other states and went back and looked at my notes, and actually the ranges were bigger than I originally said. However, it really varies widely by the type of network and the scope of content they're using, but you're looking at about $1 million to $6 million for system build-out and about $1.5 to $3 million for an annual operating budget. However, you can't really translate that directly to Oregon. Many states have had to start their systems from scratch, from installing cameras in their capital to putting in a control room, as well as for distribution. As I pointed out in my earlier slides, we already have a lot of distribution or a lot of production infrastructure in place here in the capital. So, with our research complete, we basically came up with the top three solutions that really had any sort of potential. The first solution, which I'll explain more in detail in a moment, was our recommended solution to legislative leadership, which is basically to partner with Oregon Public Broadcasting and Southern Oregon Public Television to distribute via digital broadcasting. And again, I'll go a little bit into the detail on that in a moment. The other two solutions we felt were really just too limited to be viable for the state. For one thing, satellite to cable systems and microwave fiber to cable systems only reaches cable subscribers. You can imagine there's many communities in Oregon where you just can't get cable. Also, not all cable systems, incidentally, have channels available where they could dedicate for this content a 24/7 Oregon channel. And if all of them run it, really with a cable-only solution, you're reaching maybe 55 to 60% of Oregon's households. And incidentally, rural Oregonians would essentially have no access, the same ones, by the way, that typically don't have broadband internet access as well.
Bill, if I might interrupt you for just a moment, let me ask you a question about option number one versus two and three.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the method of propagation of signal on two and three, but what does the propagation of the signal look like on option number one here?
Well, Mr. Chair, let me advance to the next slide here,
okay.
Go into a little bit of detail on that. First off, we found that digital broadcasting is the only solution that provides two methods of viewer access. One is over the air, over the airwaves, which essentially is free. Free TV is often the term used, and cable. Digital broadcasting is a technology that allows television stations to broadcast more than one channel of content. They call it multicasting. The FCC is mandating, by the way, television stations to phase out their analog broadcasts and convert all of their systems to digital. So stations, in fact, most stations are already broadcasting digital. Eventually, once enough consumers have adopted digital television set technology, they will shut off their analog systems and there will only be digital broadcasting. So basically, the idea is we would partner with OPB and SOPTV to use a slice of their bandwidth to broadcast a dedicated Oregon channel as one of their channels that they broadcast over the airwaves, and also incidentally could be received by cable systems who wish to, if they elect, to put it on one of their channels. If fully implemented, this solution potentially could be accessible in most areas of the state for 90 to 95% of Oregon residents. Also, another big plus for this solution is that it builds on a national agreement that actually, as we were going through this report, this agreement was signed between public television stations and cable providers, which basically provides for the eventual carriage. Cable industry agreed to the eventual carriage of all digital channels offered by public television stations. So you can imagine if OPB or Southern Oregon Public Television is broadcasting an Oregon channel as one of their channels that they're broadcasting over the airwaves. With this agreement, eventually participating cable companies would then provide a channel for that. Does that answer your question, Mr. Chair?
Yes, thank you.
Some other possibilities to augment this solution. We definitely think broadband internet streaming and archiving would definitely complement this type of television coverage. Video on demand partnerships with cable companies is another possibility. And we'd certainly want to keep the door open for partnerships with the direct broadcast services, the DirecTVs and Dish Network people for carriage by on their systems as well. One other possibility as well that came up in some of our discussions was partnering with the state's emergency folks to give them an outlet for communicating to the public statewide on an Oregon channel in a time of crisis or an emergency. This recommended solution certainly has its limitations. For one thing, this solution will likely take years to achieve its desired results, possibly 2009 or 2010. The success depends really on the adoption of digital television technology by consumers. The latest statistics I've found show that right now about 15% of households owns a digital television, and of those, only about 4% has a digital tuner, which they're able to receive digital signals over the airwaves. The consumer electronics industry, by the way, estimates that most Americans, about 85%, won't have digital tuners probably until about 2010. So this is really a long-term approach. Also, the distribution infrastructure statewide is incomplete, and build-out costs are likely to be high, probably in the millions, which brings up our next steps for this project. So where do we go from here? Well, we plan to continue discussions with our partners, including Oregon Public Broadcasting, SOP TV, and OPAN, to further explore costs, distribution costs for this solution, and the feasibility of approach. We also plan to present a detailed proposal back to legislative leadership, and if approved, initiate an implementation project and get it underway. And that is, in a sense, our analysis project summary. Any questions?
Thank you. Questions? Yes, Gary.
I have about three or four questions here, unrelated to each other. Do we have a successor to the old EdNet system? Did something take its place?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Wilhelms, yes, my understanding, I have to research this and get back to you with specifics, but my understanding is that the EdNet system was replaced with the current, I believe, video conference network operated by the DAS IRMD department, I believe. I'll have to research that and get back to you, but I think it was discovered that it's actually cheaper to do it via video conference technology as opposed to leasing satellite space on a sport, you know, orbiting satellite and distribute that way.
Okay, I would like to know what the status of that is. Okay, question two, do we restrict our moving forward with attempting to broadcast as much as we can of what's going on here in the legislature because of the lack of broadband availability to the public? I mean, are we pulling in our horns because of the ability of the public to access what we're doing, or are we kind of moving forward as best we can, putting the information out there regardless of who can receive it?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Wilhelms, I think we've been moving forward as best we can. We have in place, as I mentioned, extensive, well, for not video, but web audio archiving on the internet, live streams of all the committees going at any one time in the building. I think, however, there's been some infrastructure challenges to increase that. Our IT folk to better answer that portion. And certainly down the road, we'd like to improve and expand our online presence. But in terms of television distribution, and, you know, distributing a television signal, it's a very expensive proposition. Fiber and microwave is point to point, for one thing, and building out that infrastructure, if you can imagine, every cable system around the state would be very expensive. Satellite space, you have to have enough bandwidth to carry a decent signal, and satellite space is extremely expensive, to the tune of probably about $300,000 to $350,000 a year just for satellite space. I hope that answers your question somewhat.
Yeah, it does somewhat. Thank you. Do we have any statistics indicating the number of people who are participating in the limited access that they do have at this point? Is there any way to measure how many people really care and really are tuning in?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Wilhelms, unfortunately, we don't have a means to accurately measure. We don't have any Nielsen ratings, for example, of our television feed. The only measure we have is just general viewers that call us or email us to comment on our coverage. There's no accurate numbers to determine really how many people are watching and when. It also highly depends on what the legislature happens to be doing at that particular time. There's a lot more viewers, I think, when there's a major debate going on the floor of the House and it's been widely publicized in the newspaper, for example. Viewership is going to go way down, obviously, when the legislature is not meeting perhaps we're rebroadcasting a hearing from the previous day or previous week or something like that.
Well, and finally, I guess this is more of a comment than it is a question, but I hope that in your further endeavors in this regard, that at least over the next year, you will attempt to reach out to the legislature for whatever support you need through this organization. It really does fit, in my opinion, very well with one of our missions. One of the only ways that I can think of to help improve the image of the legislature is let people know what's really going on and let them tune in and watch and find out that it's not necessarily what they perceive, and if they can see it firsthand, it would help a lot. So I'm an eager, strong supporter, with the understanding that we got to make a case because it's going to cost a lot of money. But one of the missions of our commission is to make the recommendations if we believe they're appropriate, and we will attempt to get the resources to cover the cost if it is determined that it is a worthwhile endeavor. I think based on what our chairman said earlier in this meeting, one of the best things that we can do is provide access to demonstrate to Oregonians what is really going on in this building. So I'll sign up to help you out any way I can.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Wilhelms, if it's any indication, too, our neighbors to the north, TVW, probably has one of the more successful state public affairs networks in the country. I may be able to research to see if they have any viewership numbers for their feed as well. And I do know, I always remember a comment I got from a report or reading an article in the local paper, I believe, who was watching our coverage on television, and he commented that after watching hours and hours of this stuff, he had since become a legaholic.
That's too bad.
I suppose there are some risks involved in broadcasting our content.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sheriff.
Mr. Chair, I do have a question. I noticed here in your overview of video conferencing limited capacity, have you reached out to, say, AOC, Association of Oregon Counties, who has worked on this issue of establishing video conferencing on a statewide basis for full participation? So that might be an avenue to consider of those partners that you're looking at reaching out to that gives you that vehicle. So,
yeah, we, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Ramirez, we actually partner with DAS Video Conferencing Services to provide video conferencing here in the Capitol, and they maintain a very comprehensive list of locations around the state that they can interconnect with. And the challenge of video conferencing currently is that it's very difficult to achieve as a last-minute kind of accommodation. The man on walking off the street to testify in a committee, that kind of thing. There's really three parties that have to coordinate this. One is the remote end, then there's the DAS video conference center in between, and then there's our control room in the middle. So there are some challenges there, as well as currently we only have six hearing rooms, this room and rooms A through F, that are equipped to receive video conference testimony. However, we found that when we do it, it is very popular. In fact, last session we had a we had a revenue committee, I believe it was a joint Ways and Means committee, where they video conferenced in six or seven locations around the state simultaneously, taking testimony from dozens of people at each location. So it really works well. And definitely look into a partnership with AOC if we can expand that further.
If you could pursue that and see if there's an opportunity there and let us know what you come up with.
Certainly.
Thank you. Let the record show that Bridget Burns has joined us today. Bridget, welcome.
Thank you.
And do you have a question?
I do, actually. Just for clarification on the statistics that you presented, you said it was 15% of the population that had these digital recorders in their home, or they were able to achieve receive it into their home. I'm just wondering, the 4% and the 15%, is it 4% of 15 or is it 4% of the total population?
According to this is from the Consumer Electronics Association, 4% of 15.
Oh.
Yes, and these are digital television sets. And incidentally, if you buy a digital television set, it doesn't necessarily mean the digital television set has the tuner with it that's capable of receiving those digital signals over the airwaves. A lot of times they're sold as a separate unit. So right now, 15% owns a digital television set, and then a really small slice is able to watch it over the airwaves.
Do we have any numbers on the rate of adoption or perceived future hopes that the numbers that we're going to be having?
I don't now. I may be able to get those numbers for you. The latest estimate, just long term, is they estimate that by 2010 they'll reach about an 85% threshold, at which point it's recommended or mandated that television stations then turn off their analog transmitters and only broadcast digitally. So really several years down the road before that ramps up.
Thank you. Mark Garber, our panelist in Gresham, is joining us by telephone, and I'm unable to see him wave his arm if he has a question here. Mark, I want to let you in case you do have
I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman. I was trying to figure out how to gracefully do that. I'm watching it on streaming video, but one of the interesting things is there's probably a 15 or 20-second lag between the conversation and the video, so it's the technology still has a way to go, I suppose. I was interested, and thank you, Bill, for your testimony and also for the written information you provided us in advance. It looked like a lot of this, or all of this, was presented to the legislature in the 05 session. I'm just curious what, if anything, was done with that by the legislature. Sort of where do we stand with it now?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garber, we presented simply a recommendation for a solution to legislative leadership. Our project sponsors at that time, Commissioner Wilhelms and Connie Seeley, asked us to continue our discussions with our partners on this solution because there's a lot of details remaining to be worked out, specifically cost. We don't have any firm costs at this point, as well as other details of how to create the Oregon Channel, how it's going to look and feel, how it would be governed, what kind of build-out phases would we recommend. So there's a lot of details we have to hash out, I think, before we were able to really present a concrete solution back to the legislature.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The only other question I had was in terms of, I think, first of all, maybe a comment, and that is I agree that with Gary, that our Commissioner Wilhelms, that the opportunity to for people to see it unfiltered, and as a media person, I'm well aware that often what the public gets through traditional media is the conflict, because that's the most interesting part of the story is when there's conflict. And but 90% or 95% of what happens in the legislature probably doesn't involve conflict, and so it doesn't necessarily get published or broadcasted. And I agree that having that unfiltered access would be a good thing for the public and help to increase the understanding of the legislature. The other piece of it that we touched on a little bit is then how do you go the other direction in terms of interactivity and allowing greater access for the public in terms of giving input, testifying, and that sort of thing. And I understand that we have these areas, these centers where people can go and with a certain amount of work sort of get set up and provide testimony via video conferencing. But I'm wondering if there's some recommendations about how we can move that along quicker and make it more accessible to people.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, this project focused primarily on distribution of our television content, so we didn't really address any of the two-way communications aspects in this project. Rich, I don't know if you want to speak on the IT.
Yes, for the record, I'm Rich Engels. I'm the Information Systems Manager here at the legislature. And we know that there are technologies out there that can be used for two-way communications. The Internet is becoming a good way to do two-way communications, but it still requires software systems used by both parties, and I don't think those are widely available at this point. I think over the next few years, they are going to be widely available, and I think we'll have many opportunities to look at how can we connect people without having to do an official location in their area that they would go to. But right now, we're not aware of anything that's pervasive that could be used today. I guess I'd say I expect that to be coming in the next few years, and we'll be watching that very closely for our own use as well as for use with the public.
Thank you. Mark, any follow-up?
No, thank you. That's
okay, thank you. Just one thing I wanted to mention here or ask about the digital partnership option with OPB and SOP, Southern Oregon Public Television, that offers potentially 90 to 95% penetration here. Now, does one have to have a digital television set for this to work?
Not necessarily. If... again, once fully implemented and looking way down the road, first of all, with the federal mandates in place, eventually consumers, from what I understand, will only have the choice of being able to buy a digital television set. You won't be able to buy a set that cannot receive it, first of all. However, if you don't have a digital television set or can't receive the signal, the other avenue of access potentially is through your local cable system. Mm-hmm. So that's another possibility because of that partnership in place between the cable industry and the public television stations to carry all the digital channels offered by the PBS stations. So cable is another avenue. And then a third avenue is possibly a broadband video access as well over the Internet.
Sure, Chair Wilson, one thing I'd add there is that while we're talking with them about the digital format and using that method of getting a signal out. We're also talking with them about what could we do between now and, let's say, 2009 and 2010 to get the signal out to more people than we're doing now. So we're trying to look at various options to increase it substantially in the beginning and find alternate ways to use in the short term, but be building towards that digital format down the road.
Thank you. Rather than reinventing the wheel here, the TBW, the Washington system, is that perhaps a good example of a system that works and is viable in the short term?
Yes, it is. In fact, they are in the process of building a new control facility, I think on the order of $4 to $4.5 million in Olympia. Their system does have some limitations of that. Right now, they're currently targeting primarily cable systems. Mm-hmm. So to watch TVW, you really have to have cable, but they also have a robust streaming component on their website with archived and live streaming content as well.
And no over-the-air broadcasting of that?
Not that I'm aware of currently.
Okay. Seems to me that over-the-air is an important component to this, if it could be worked into the cable penetration and everything else. Any further questions here before we go? This is something that's really important to us here, obviously, as a committee. And if you would stay in touch with us, we really want the latest and the best information and a dash of pragmatism in there, too. You know, something that can be perhaps paid for, whether it's involving a partnership with someone in the private sector, I don't know. But we want to continue this dialogue because as we move along, this committee wants to make a recommendation that is viable and saleable to the legislature. So if we could stay in contact on this, we'd appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, I just have one last question with regards to IT technology. I know that there's an IT association, statewide association. Is that an association that the state participates with, has dialogue around IT technology and how we can interface that technology to leverage it for not only state use but also for local usage? If I could get a sense of where you're at with that.
Commissioner Ramirez, I'm not sure what organization that is. We do talk with other IT organizations throughout the state of Oregon. We participate wherever we can with folks in that regard. There are many IT organizations throughout the state, and we do talk with a number of them just to make sure that we're plugged in. But I'm not quite sure which ones you're talking about. So.
Well, this is I don't recall the name of it. Our IT director belongs to that statewide organization, and they plan to work on policies and coordinate on a statewide basis from the local level. And so I'm not sure how the state is interfaced with those folks that are looking at this at a statewide basis. And I just don't, you know, again, I don't want there to be two efforts here at two different levels. So that's why I'm posing that question.
We'll try to. I have a feeling that that's an association of counties throughout the state is what you're probably referring to. We stay in touch with the Department of Administrative Services, which controls technology, if you will, information technology for the state. And so we're in touch with them, and we try to stay within the same standards base and use the same technology so that everything is compatible on that basis. But it probably would be worth our while to talk with the county organizations as well to make sure that in the future we can use the same capabilities that way.
Exactly.
That, you're right, that's another channel that we'll be able to use broadly, I think, in the future.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your testimony, and since this hearing is obviously going out over the Internet and some cable systems, we want those who are watching and or listening today to realize that this hearing involves them, too, and so we want to hear your ideas about high-tech and the things that we've discussed today. So please get in touch with this committee, and we'd love to hear from you in the public. Gentlemen, thank you. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, well, we're mercifully on time here and going to try to stay that way today. Next on our agenda today is entitled How Print, Television, and Radio News Media Organizations Function in the Capital. And we have invited testimony here today, and I think Peter Wong is here. Colin Fogarty, gentlemen, if you would come forward. As mentioned, we've got an eye on the future, but we also have an eye on what's going on right now. the here and now. And to that end, we welcome both of you today. Good to see you both again.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I think I'll start off. I'm Peter Long. I'm a Capitol Bureau reporter for the Statesman Journal newspaper in Salem. And I'm also president of the Oregon Legislative Correspondents Association, otherwise known as the Press Corps. I admit to a touch of nervousness, but I did do this, believe it or not, about 30 years ago before a United States House subcommittee. So I'm at least somewhat familiar with the procedures. And, of course, over 25 years of covering Oregon government and politics, I've had lots of opportunities to observe how it should and shouldn't be done. So I hope I accomplish that mission at least today. I have submitted a two-page written statement and some attachments. I will not take the committee's time to read the statement, but I will summarize it briefly and then I'll turn it over to Colin. I do have also a couple of remarks based on the chairman's opening remarks that might reinforce some of the points he made, and then we'll open up to questions. The news media, of course, are not state employees or state agencies, but we have been a presence in the Capitol for many years. I do not know all of the history, but I do know that the Associated Press has had an office in the Capitol for many years. In the Statesman Journal, I do know that in my research, the Statesman has had an office here in the Capitol for almost 50 years. It dates back to the late 1950s. This became a more formal arrangement in 1971 with the establishment of the Oregon Legislative Correspondents Association. It's mostly a housekeeping organization. I became its president when I arrived at the Statesman in 2000. I think, unlike elections that you were familiar with, I was the candidate drafted to fill the position. I did not campaign for it. Basically, it was established at the time because the legislative leadership, from my understanding, did not want to go through the task of deciding who should qualify for space and who shouldn't. And they decided to set the broad parameters on what space would be made available and let the news media as an organized body through this association decide those questions. Over the years, the function of the association has broadened somewhat, although it's still mostly housekeeping. We deal with parking problems, which are largely outside the purview of the legislature because they are Salem City streets. And I will add, parenthetically, 90% of my headaches deal with parking. Security issues have arisen, the association has been delegated to deal with those as to who gets electronic access cards and who doesn't. And there are other functions such as that. When I first came here in 1980, believe it or not, the news media actually were part of the state telephone system that was discontinued in the 1980s, partly through deregulation, partly through a decision that kind of was a conflict. In 1993, which coincided with the opening of our current facilities in the basement, which you will be touring later, I understand, the legislative leadership instituted a system of rent for news organizations renting space in the Capitol. And that rate is linked to the Department Administrative Services rate that is charged to state agency for rental. So it goes up automatically as their that rate goes up. There have been really no complaints about it. We do realize that we do use the janitorial security, heating and air conditioning facilities at the Capitol, and the rate is set on a square foot per month basis. What we do in the offices is up to each organization in terms of equipment and furnishings, although a number of the furnishings seem to be hand-me-downs from previous administrations, because I do know that some of them still carry the metal tags from Secretary of State when the Secretary of State, and that dates me quite a while. Secretary of State was once in charge of the building before I believe the legislature took that function over in the 1970s. I had a few few responses to my request for comments on technology and other issues. Colin will speak to the radio functions in a minute. Some of the ones I got were, as I found, generally shared with other parts of the building for other functions, and I would say generally they focus on the inadequacy of this building to handle modern communications technology in terms of broadband access to the internet, Wi-Fi technology, and in the basement, particularly cellular telephones and pagers do not work or seem to have dead spots. I do know that our friends in the lobby often step outside the building so that they can make their phone calls. I do know this has been a long-standing problem because in the 1990s, when I worked as a reporter for the paper in Medford, the Medford Mail Tribune, but was based here during sessions, I will always have to hook up telephone service, and the Quest person would say, yes, this building is a nightmare in terms of the wiring. And this was just telephone service. This wasn't anything fancy at that point. So I know that has been a problem for a number of years. You will be touring the press quarters later. There is a major renovation plan which is independent of this process. It is necessitated by a plan to put in modern electrical machinery into the building, and the only place I am told they can put this machinery is in our current press conference room. So there will be kind of a shift that will move some offices to other areas within that basement area. So, that concludes my prepare remarks. I did want to make a couple of remarks responding to the chairman's remarks on teleconferencing. As a reporter, now, I have spent 25 years covering Oregon government and politics. Only the last 5 or so years have been with the Statesman Journal. The other 20 years have been 10 years roughly with Roseburg News Review and 10 years with the Mail Tribune in Medford. And in Roseburg, I was a visitor to the Capitol until maybe the last 2 or 3 weeks of a legislative session, then I would stay here full time. In Medford, at least at that time, the reporter who covered politics was based here during the session, so I lived in Salem during the length of the session and then would move back within a couple of weeks afterward. When I first started in Roseburg covering the legislature, I would send my stories either by the bus. It was an afternoon paper, so there was an opportunity to have somebody typeset it into the paper, or by phone in a pinch. That did change with technology as we got, today our laptops, but the first models of those were heavier than typewriters, as some of you might recall. I do know during my reporting, and I obviously reported not only items of statewide interest, but obviously activities of legislators from the region, as well as issues affecting, or legislation affecting people in that region. And I got one comment from somebody who said, that reporting makes me feel more like a part of the state. Now, that does not mean that that person or those people agree with everything that happens in Salem, but I think that is a link between areas outside the valley news media that I think is valuable, and I think partly because of technology isn't as capitalized upon by the news media outside the valley, but partly because of the limitations they are not able to take advantage of that. The chair made some remarks about teleconferencing and the ability of people to make their voices heard. I think that is very valuable. I saw some intimations of how that would be valuable in the late 1990s when I worked in Medford, because the Chamber of Medford, Jackson County, would have a weekly, it started as a phone conference in 1961, I believe, but in the late 1990s, they went to teleconferencing using one of these very hearing rooms. And the video was a little strange to watch sometimes, especially from their end. Of course, they might have thought the video from this end might have been strange, but it did give them a visual link to people 240 miles away and their legislators. So I think the legislature could make a lot more use of that technology and getting people in areas that are not close to Salem to talk about their state government. I will say also that reporting that, at least for the near term, will be a kind of a up-close affair, because there's a lot that you cannot see and a lot that happens in the legislature that basically is an interchange between people. And I think you still need people who are trained in understanding government and observing interactions to report that story, whether it be conflict or something less dramatic than that, but just as important. That basically concludes my remarks. Turn it over to Colin to make whatever remarks he would like to make concerning radio, and then we'll be available for questions.
All right, Peter, thank you, and we'll reserve a time for questions when Colin's there. Sure.
Good morning. I can't tell you how many committee hearings I've covered, and yet I've never actually sat here and testified before, so this is a first for me. I should admit, for the record, my name's Colin Fogarty. I'm a reporter with Oregon Public Broadcasting Radio. We're a statewide network, although it's not quite statewide, but it's virtually statewide. It's 80% of the state's population. We have stations in Tillamook, in Portland, Corvallis, Bend, Pendleton, and Lakeview. So we reach most of the state's population. Just a little bit about my history covering the legislature. I started in 1994, or I started at OPB in 1994 covering the legislature during the 95 session. And at that time, we had a huge rail-to-rail that was dusty, and I had razor blades that I tended to cut my fingers on. And I would splice things, and I would type on this old typewriter. And to edit my stories, you know, we go through an editing process where an editor has to hear every word that I have in my story. I would call and read and play the tape over the phone. And I had carts, and it was a very low-tech situation. What I do now is I have no moving parts on any recording equipment that I have. I record everything on a disc about this size, and it's the same kind of disc that you would use for a digital camera. And I pop it, this isn't my laptop, but it looks just like this. I pop it right into the computer, I click and drag, and I edit right there. Last week I covered the U.S. Supreme Court in Washington, D.C. when they were doing the assisted suicide case, and I found a hotspot right across the street from the court. There's a public radio office there, and I was an entirely enclosed entity. I recorded all my interviews. I typed it all up in a story, and I sent it to Portland, and it sounded as if I was reporting from Portland, but I was doing it from D.C. The reason I bring that up is that if this building was entirely Wi-Fi, I think you'd see a lot more radio coverage. There are two things, if I was going to make any two suggestions. One would be make the entire building Wi-Fi, not only for me, because what I could do, I mean, we have an office down in the basement now, and we've got an internet connection, a high-speed internet connection. But if the whole building was Wi-Fi, I could do essentially the same thing that I do now anywhere in the building. In other words, I could sit in the balcony and listen to the governor's State of the State address and have something on the air about it before he even ended, or she, as the case may be, before the speech even ended. Because I could isolate a sound bite, I could write something about it, and I could send it up to Portland just like that. And the reason I bring that up is that, you know, with, you know, Robert Kennedy, who was the longtime KEX reporter, and before that, Bob Valdez, reporter for KEX, those two and I have been the most consistent radio people here for as long as I've been here. Where Robert Kennedy left, and I'm not sure that they're going to replace him, and I'm not sure that KEX is going to have someone, except maybe they'll have someone during the session a little more often, but not with the same permanency. With a Wi-Fi connection building-wide, you could have any radio station that could come in here and pop right in, write a story, and pop right out. And I think that they would, stations around the state would be much more likely to come in and do that if they could have a quiet place. The other thing, and actually there are three points that I wanted to make. The other suggestion that I have about that is about the web. Right now, I know that their radio station, Kink, the reporter for Kink told me this the other day, that he likes to use the legislature's website where you can hear committee hearings and you can hear debates on the floor on the web. And then you could just lift quotes out of that and put those on the air, and you can find out a little bit about what was going on. But the problem with it is that it's on real audio, and I have to admit that I'm not the technical wizard about all this, but the sound quality is not as good as MP3. And OPB Radio used to play everything on its website over real audio, and it was fine. It was the best that we could do and everything. But some time ago, we converted everything to MP3, and the sound quality is great. I mean, it's as if you're listening to the radio. I mean, there are engineers who will tell you it's not exactly the same. And if you had WAV files, you know, then it would be perfect. But, of course, that would crash your computer, but the server. But if everything was on MP3, then any station in Lakeview or Pendleton or Roseburg could listen and put it on the air very easily, very simply, and it would sound good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, real audio sounds fine and it's understandable and everything like that. And maybe I'm just a radio geek, so it matters to me. But sound quality makes a difference. It makes a big difference in how people perceive what they hear. It makes a big difference in how the story is presented and how it goes out over the air. It's not something people notice. Like, I get very self-conscious when I have phone tape in my stories, and I always think, well, you know, that's worse. And it is, and most people don't notice it. Most people just listen to the words if it's written well. But something that is a clear, a sound quality that is clear and you're not distracted by anything within it, just goes into the ear a lot easier. It's just a lot easier. So if the legislature's website had MP3, that would be great. One other note about the legislature's website. I think it's great. It has a lot of great information and great material on there. It's just not so organized so well. And I don't even know who designs it, so I'm not sure who I'm... I don't want to step on anyone's toes. But, I mean, just as an example of it, on my, you know, favorites on my computer, I have House third reading calendars and Senate third reading calendars. Well, most people outside the legislature, and in fact most reporters that don't cover the legislature on a regular basis, don't know what third reading calendars are. So if there was something right on the front page that said House scheduled today, it would be a lot easier to find. But instead, you have to go through several steps to find out whether that bill you're paying attention to is going to come up for a vote today. The committee agendas online is a little easier to find. But if there was some way to design the website that was would just make it a little more user-friendly, that would not only help the general public, but I think it would help reporters who don't normally cover the legislature. And I'm thinking mainly of rural reporters, and and anymore urban reporters as well on the radio. But the radio is a as old a technology as it is, and I know Chair Wilson is well aware of this, that it is a tremendous source of information, a tremendous source of news, particularly local news in this state. So I think those are the three main points that I wanted to make, other than one of the things, and I know I've interviewed several of you this way, so I know you're familiar with it. When I want to interview a legislator, I ask them to just step off the floor for a little bit. We usually go to the sort of generally quiet hallway behind the House or behind the Senate. But the thing is that it's not really quiet. People come in and out, people walk by, people are loud, and it's not an ideal place to do interviews. So if there were some designated quiet place for me to do radio interviews, or for print people to do interviews too that are undistracted, or for TV people to do interviews, either off the Senate floor or off the House floor, I think it would be a lot easier. If it was sort of in a more organized way, you'd have legislators get on the air a lot more often, I think, because other reporters dipping in and dipping out of the legislature could come in and find it easier if there was an organized way to do these interviews. They would be able to come in and get their local legislator and be able to do a quick interview. I know it's not appropriate probably to talk about the open caucus issue because this is the facilities subcommittee, but while I'm here, I'll just tell you how important the open caucus is and how I think the experience of covering the Senate Democrats and their open caucus meetings is a tremendous value in helping people understand what's going on in the legislature. Because what you get in open caucuses is the real unvarnished reasons and political and policy factors that go into the decisions that are made. That is tremendously helpful in being able to explain to our listeners what is going on in the legislature, and not having access to that. I mean, I never knew really what I was missing until those meetings started to be open. So I know I won't take up a lot of time talking about that, but I'll just say it's not only helpful for reporters, but it's helpful for our audience in understanding what is truly going on, what is truly going on in the Oregon legislature.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. And we'll open it to questions. And let's go to Commissioner Garber. He may have some questions here, and he's appearing by phone from Gresham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciated the testimony from both of the people there. And I was curious on the Wi-Fi question. That seems like a fairly inexpensive solution, and I was just wondering why it's not already in place. Is there not a Wi-Fi availability in the Capitol at all right now?
I believe the lobby message center does have that. That was provided by a company, but I believe it is not available elsewhere. But I'm not the expert on that.
I would mention that it's not just radio and print that would benefit from that, but TV as well. I know that television stations are moving toward doing everything digitally, and it's a little more difficult in TV than it is in radio, but they're moving toward that too. And if I'm not mistaken, I'm getting this information secondhand, so Peter could confirm it, but I know the TV stations that do cover the legislature, their offices are being consolidated so that they have one wire up to a microwave, and I think that's still useful, but 5 or 10 years from now, nobody's going to, I'm not going to claim credit for this, but the only thing a microwave is going to be useful for is cooking 5 years from now. It's all going to be based over the Internet. So I think the TV stations would benefit from that, too.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Garber, perhaps a little reluctance on moving too quickly with this. It's hard to know what's going to happen 3 to 5 years from now. I was parenthetically reminded that after I leave here today, I will be speaking to a group of students at Oregon State, and one of my topics is how is the new delivery of news going to change in the next few years? No, it's hard to predict that, let alone, as I said, in the 35 years I've been in reporting, we started with typewriters. Now those things are belonging to the Smithsonian, but it's hard to say what the latest advance will be even 5 years from now that would make a big investment that might be made in an obsolete technology, basically a waste of money.
Thank you. Follow-up from Commissioner Garber.
I appreciate that, and I guess that's kind of one of the struggles we're going to have with a lot of these questions, including the one that we previously discussed, and that is the technology changes so fast you really don't know what the next latest greatest thing is, but we just sometimes have to take a stab at it, or just at least maybe recommend some ways for the legislature to continually keep up with it the same way that industry has to do that. That's a comment, not a question, obviously. And not to get off topic on the open caucus, but I guess I would be interested in, you know, referring to the process committee that issue. I think it's probably already on their agenda, and open it up a little broader to say, should the Oregon legislature be subject to the Oregon public meetings law? And you know, it may be outside of our area of study here, but it's certainly something that ought to be talked about by someone within the commission.
Sure. Thank you. Colin, I appreciate you talking about Wi-Fi. I know public radio has great penetration statewide, and Wi-Fi would be of great help. I'm personally very interested in that, and MP3 audio. From the commercial side of radio, I certainly agree with that. It is just important for us in the radio business, as you know, to make it as easy to hear, easy to assimilate as you can, and MP3 is great, and we utilize that a lot. And it always gives me great pleasure when I hear my news crew using voice cuts and sound that is just beautiful, you know. So, great, thank you. One brief question about the press facility. Is being in the basement just simply intrinsically bad?
Yes, if we could have the speaker's office, that would be great.
I'm not interested in that view, Mr. Chairman.
We'll probably have a subsequent referral to the process. Speaker's office.
Mr. Chairman, I've been through a couple of iterations of the press room. The person who probably knows the most about that, Chuck Biggs, is retiring at the end of the month, and he does remember that when he first came here, it was where the facility services office is now. And then it was moved to the area, and this is how I remember it, where the lobby message center is now, and then the offices of the Associated Press and the Statesman Journal. And that was kind of like a few rabbit warrens stuck together when they put the broadcast facilities in there. And the press room was very long and narrow and really wasn't very good for television. So when the current facilities were designed, I was not involved in that process at the time, even though I was a member of the press corps because I was not here full time, but the folks who designed that did try to take in some of those concerns. And this happened about a dozen years ago after emergency services moved into their present quarters. Well, they're now on State Street, but they moved on into a building on Cottage Street, so they vacated the area that was sort of underneath the rotunda next to 150. So I am told by Chuck Biggs that at one time it was actually on the press quarters, such as they were, and there weren't very many offices, were on the second floor. But I haven't been able to verify that. I will say Oregon has I have not made a 50-state survey, but I am a member of a national organization of State House reporters, and Oregon has relatively adequate facilities. I know in California, no news media organization has an office in the Capitol itself, even though the Capitol is and its adjacent annexes are much larger than Oregon's. All of them rent private space in Sacramento. In Washington, the news media do not have offices in the Capitol itself, but they have actually an old house where the news media have their offices. It is on the legislative campus in Olympia. I can't speak to situation in all 50 states, but I know in Oregon, we are fortunate in having office space within the Capitol itself.
Thank you. Well, we could probably find an old house. One question about parking. Is that a real issue? I mean, is that just inconvenient, or is that a real issue in public access, the media access to this building?
I will say, Mr. Chairman, that I have learned a lot about politics dealing with the people's squabbles about parking. That I had never learned covering other forms of politics. Mm. However, I have talked. This was once administered by the facilities division over at Department of Administrative Services, and they say they get some of the same comments. And when people perceive their parking as threatened, they say things that they might not ordinarily say. I will say that this goes back to 1991 after the current Capitol Mall configuration was set up and the streets, I think they were East Summer and West Summer, were closed off. And they are used now primarily as access ways for buses and emergency vehicles. Mm-hmm. But there's no public parking there. The city and the state came up with a relatively complex arrangement reserving some spots on the street for news media, and it was convoluted because the state administered the program, but the city actually took the money. Last fall, the city decided to simplify it by just having the city administer that. We have 14 spaces. we have the authority under the association to kind of allocate them, basically except for the Associated Press, which has two spaces because they have had two full-time people here for years. It's basically one per organization. They pay a set amount to the city. The fights come in when organizations with multiple vehicles will park there, and oftentimes they are not aware that of the agreement that we have that limits everybody to one vehicle, and fights park, especially when, yes, I will say it, when television vehicles park in the print media spaces. Mm. Yeah, the print folks are usually here most days of the week, and so we have had those conflicts. They're less obviously when there is no session. For live vehicles, the big oversized vehicles used for live broadcasts, they can't, because they can't really fit into those spaces. They often park on the hard surfaces of the Capitol Mall, and that is controlled by the Department of Administrative Services, not the legislature.
Okay. Thank you.
The only suggestion that I was going to have about that, we have a parking spot. When I first started, we didn't, and it was extremely difficult. I mean, we rented a spot several blocks away, but that just meant more exercise for me. But the one suggestion I would have is that, you know, in times when I don't have my parking pass or someone else wants to come down, you know, you can go down to the facilities office and or the printing office and buy a day pass, right, at $6. Well, I think if you had a media rate for that, maybe if it was $3 as opposed to $6, or maybe if those were not necessarily the price, but if they were somehow more accessible, I think you'd have other organizations finding it easier to come in and just park around in the spots that you can have one of those day passes for.
Actually, parenthetically, Mr. Chairman, I think we have been able to solve the media fleet problem with the city of Salem. I haven't quite done all the arrangements, but I think I'm going to satisfy that concern, and there will be peace in our time, and I can get on to the Middle East peace negotiations.
Thank you. Co-Chair Wilhelms.
Mr. Chair, Peter, are the 14 spaces that the media has 14 spots that you need a parking permit pass for? They're just allocated to the media, or are they freebies?
No, they are not free. They're the current rate the city charges is $40 a month, and they've been talking about increasing that. I haven't heard any formal word on that, but it is controlled by the city. They must display a plastic tag, and there are community enforcement officers who go by there daily to check on that.
They're on the street?
Yes, they're all on the street. Most of them are on Court Street. There are about five on Winter Street.
It's really rather convenient. I mean, I should say that getting back to your question about, you know, is the basement acceptable? You know, the fact that you can park right across the street and you know your spot's there, and then you have a space right in the basement, is a tremendous asset. I mean, it makes covering the legislature a lot easier, a lot less time consuming, and it just makes it very simple.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Whalen, I regard it as an honest broker because most mornings I walk to work, so I don't generally use a parking permit.
Yes, thank you. Any further questions? Yes.
Sure. I'm just curious, Mr. Fogarty, about your question about, or your idea about creating kind of quiet zones within the legislature. Now, how do you see that actually developing? Like, do you think signs or kiosks or an actual room that we would set aside?
You know, I don't know. I really honestly haven't thought it entirely through. I don't know where exactly you would put it. If there was some sort of cube area or a room that could be set aside for this. Also, I mean, getting back to the question about the basement, if there were sort of cubbies that you could use, that media could use to broadcast from. I mean, so you have an internet access, you have the place to put your laptop, and you have just a place to work. You could also do interviews there. I mean, but in other words, if you had a space somewhere in the basement or somewhere on the second floor for visiting media to do their work, to do interviews, or to do for regular media to do interviews, I think that would improve coverage dramatically.
Commissioner Burns, in my written testimony, I give a little bit of an explanation how the press space is allocated, and basically enclosed office space is usually rented on a year-round basis by organizations, and there is a common area where some news media, mostly newspapers who staff only the session, rent desks. That is certainly not a quiet area since for a decade I was the reporter for the Medford Mail Tribune. I worked in the open area, and I know when there were press conferences at spillage outside that it was not easy to work. And I can imagine that would be virtually impossible for a radio TV broadcaster to use the open area for that kind of.
Maybe in the Democratic caucus room in the House or the Republican caucus room. I don't know if you want to, if you're going to change those around, but that would be a spot where you could have something like that. Or, you know, just their phone booths. I don't know.
Thank you. All right, Commissioner Burns, thank you. Gentlemen, thank you. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you. Thanks.
We'll take about a 10-minute recess. In fact, we will take a 10-minute recess. We'll be back here at 10:35 to resume our next function here. Okay? We'll be in recess.
Mark, I'll call you right back.
The Oregon Legislature, and this is the Facilities Subcommittee. Next on the agenda is an overview of legislative website and review of technology projects and issues in the Capitol. And Rich Inglis and Daniel Russell. Thank you.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Rich Inglis. I'm the Information Systems Manager here at the Legislature. And this is Daniel Russell, who is our web editor in the building. He'll be talking with you at some length about the website that we have here at the Legislature. We're just reflecting back on what we've done this morning. We have, I think that we have in the Capitol two really excellent ways of getting information to people throughout the state of Oregon. One of those we focused on earlier, and that's the television medium and print and radio medium. I think this is the other one. Our legislative website is a very powerful means of getting information out to people and having people interact with the institution, if you will. There's a great deal of information there. So I think it's important that we take a strong look at what's available on our internet site. And Daniel has he's going to kind of lead you through the website, show you a lot of the things that are out there, and then we can kind of discuss, if you'd like, at the end, where we go from where we are today with our website.
Great.
I'll turn it over to Daniel.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, my name is Daniel Russell, and I'm the web editor here at the Capitol. I work in the Legislative Administration Office. And as the web editor, I'm responsible for maintaining files, updating websites, web pages for the legislature as well as the legislators. And what I'm going to do today is I'm going to take you over kind of a high-altitude flyover of what's available on our site, and then later on we're going to look at some of the items we have available a little bit more closely. Just as a bit of background, on our site, we have more than 57,000 pages of information, and we also, during a typical session month, that's, for example, last April, in the middle of session, we had 1.8 million hits. So this site is a very public and very upfront place where citizens in Oregon can interact with the legislature and the legislative process. And in our efforts to make it as accessible as possible, we work to follow ADA standards. And we also use what we call cross-navigation in the way the site is created. We've got, basically what that means is that from pretty much anywhere on the site, you can get to pretty much anywhere else on the site without having to backtrack to find a menu. And what I'll do today is I'll take you through our primary navigational toolbar, which is up here, and then our secondary navigational toolbar. And you can see there's a few links there, and we'll cover some of those in depth and some of those pretty briefly. And basically, from anywhere, you're always going to have a home link. It'll take you right back to this page, and you can start over from the beginning. The first two links we have up here are the Senate and the House link. And as I'll just click back and forth, you'll see that they're very similar in the way they're structured, and that's in order to make the site as predictable as possible. So when someone comes to the Senate page, they can find similar information on the House page. As an example, on the Senate page, we've got senator information right off. It's sorted in different ways to try and make it as useful to the greatest number of people possible. And this information, you'll see we've got party information, district contact information for the senators, and this same page is recreated under the House link for the representatives. This information is pulled from a database, so it is updated continuously. Also, on these pages, we've got pages for Senate leadership, as well as House leadership on the House side. We have a link to the Secretary of the Senate's office, which includes chamber rules for both the House and the Senate. And of course, on the House side, we have the Chief Clerk of the House, and we've got the House leadership pages. Also, you'll see we've got mailing labels. So if someone wants to get a message to all of the legislators, they can do that, and they can print out these pre-created mailing labels, and they're ready to go. Moving on to bills and laws, we have on the bills and laws page, we have information including all of the legislation back to the 1995 regular session, and that includes all the bills and everything through the regular and the special sessions, and also major histories back to 1995, and it's all available right here on our site. We also have the most current version of the Oregon Revised Statutes, which right now is the 2003 edition, and in a few months we'll have the 2005 edition as soon as it is compiled. And we have Oregon laws, the full text, and we started carrying those in 2001. So basically, all of the law, all of the legislation is available right here under the bills and laws on our site. Under the committees page,
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Wilhelms.
One question. The information on the bill status that comes with that last page.
Yes.
Is real time?
Mm-hmm. Not quite.
Well, tell me what it is, because we have people that call in occasionally and complain because they miss something. And I always say, well, if you were smart, you'd use the printed media rather than using that anyway, because there is a delay. And they say, no, it's real time. What is it?
Commissioner Wilhelms, in my experience, it's usually about 24 hours. But because there are people involved in the process, it's not an entirely automated process. Sometimes there's fluctuation depending on what's happening with the people. And Rich, do you know more about how that timeline works?
Gary, I can't answer that for you. I do know that we have some automatic loads of information onto the website. Bill status information, I think this is a sort of complex issue because certain things have to be released by certain offices before we're able to make it available to the public. And so we have to have those releases, and some of the delay is because of that. So while the information may be in our database, we're not able to release it and make it public on the website for some period of time until it's been proofed, basically.
Since you're the editor of the website, do you get that information automatically from the desk's system or the system that the chief clerk and the secretary of the Senate have? Is that the source of the information?
Commissioner Wilhelms, I believe so.
I would assume so, but I don't know.
There's a lot of structure to the website that is behind the scenes, and a lot of the editing I do is upfront changes. Yeah. So there's other people. Should we ask Bill Swing?
Or Don could join us if you'd like to delve into that a little bit.
No, I don't need to delve into it. You've verified that it is not real time. There is a slight delay, and I think you're right on when you say that some things have to be verified before they can actually be put on the website. I understand that. No, that's fine. I just wanted to.
Our administrator, Marjorie, may have something to add to that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think the most live piece of the website during session is the committee schedules webpage that's theoretically updated every 15 minutes. Now, the information that's contained on a committee schedule is not updated on all of the subsequent pages, and I think that happens every evening. That's my understanding of how it works. So if you see that a bill is scheduled for a hearing at 3 o'clock and it's 2 o'clock, I think that you would go to the bill, the measure history of that particular bill, and it wouldn't show up. That's my understanding of how it's worked in the past. Whereas the intranet that's accessible to building staff and legislators is a live document. So we can see what's happening at any time because the information from the desk, so floor votes or releases from the desk for particular bills, that will show up live on the intranet.
Yeah. Thank you. Please resume.
Of course. Moving on to committees, if I may. There's a couple of different items types of information available on our committee's page. We've got committee assignment information, and they've basically broken down either by legislator. Here we've got Senate committee assignments by member and House committee assignments by member. And we also have assignments by committee. So from whichever direction someone's trying to get this information, they can find it. Also on this page, we have a link to committee agendas online. And this directly relates to what Marjorie was just referring to. And we'll actually take a little bit more in-depth look at this in just a few moments, if I may. Finally, because there's a lot of folks that are coming to the Capitol to observe the process and also to participate in the process, sometimes they'll be coming to testify before a committee, we have tutorials, how to testify before a committee. Right here, if someone comes, they see committees, they go straight to how to testify. They can learn a little bit of background about what it means to testify and the steps they need to take. Next, we have budget and tax. And this basically provides an outline of what the Legislative Fiscal Office is and what they do, as well as the Legislative Revenue Office, what they do. And it links to their individual pages and the resources that each of those offices offer. We have the audio and video page. There's been discussion about this earlier today, so I'll give you a tour of the actual thing. Here we have live video, and on our live video, we are always streaming one channel continuously. Mm-hmm. And when there's a live meeting, that is being streamed. For example, as we heard earlier, this meeting is being streamed live, and my wife is watching this right now at home. And there's other people, of course, in the state that are watching this as well. Since we are, that's one channel, and as you saw, we also had the schedule of what's being broadcast. Under the audio streaming, we're capable of streaming all of the meetings that are happening inside the Capitol at a time. So any legislative meeting going on will be streamed live. And as we see, there's two meetings going on. Actually, I guess just our meeting going on right now, and it is being streamed, and people can listen to this live.
Daniel, could I have you hold up just for a second?
Of course.
I want to go to Commissioner Garber, who is watching this. At least last I heard, he was.
I'm still here.
Yeah, thank you. Could you give us any observations on the stream that you're watching? How's it going?
Well, the quality of the video isn't the greatest, and because I'm on the phone, I get the audio a lot faster than the video. But for example, just the screen when the actual web page is being displayed on the screen, I can't really. I'm familiar with it because I've gone through it before, but I can't really tell what the type says and that sort of thing. And you know, I don't know to what degree that's a technology issue at my end or at the other end. You know, it probably depends on how up to date both sides are.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Go ahead, please.
Of course. When a meeting, the audio stream is completed, it is automatically archived, and we have our audio archives listed down below, and they go back to the 1999 session. So we archive all legislative meetings, both Senate and House floor sessions, as well as all legislative committee meetings. So if someone has questions about a particular meeting, they can go out and listen to the meeting in its entirety right here from our site. Also, on the primary navigation bar, we've got a link for employment. This is where we post current recruitments. We've got a list of related sites, links to other pages that someone might be finding useful if they come to the legislative site. Maybe what they're really looking for is at Oregon.gov. We have a frequently asked questions page. It gives someone background, more information about the legislative process and what's available on our site. And we have a Capitol information page. The Capitol information page is designed to allow someone to have information about the Capitol, but also information on how to use the Capitol and how to access the Capitol. So right off the top, we've got the hours the building's open and they can come visit. And then we have calling the Capitol. Not everybody lives in Salem, and we have an 800 number for them to access the process from anywhere in the state. We have a Capitol activities calendar. This calendar is different than other schedules that are on our website in that it lists all of the meetings that are happening in the Capitol, not just legislative meetings. So, for example, if there's going to be a fire safety rally on the front steps, that will appear in the capital activities calendar, but of course it wouldn't be in committee schedules or anywhere else because it's not necessarily legislative. We have a kids page and all the resources, quizzes, facts, information for kids. And we have a capital activity planning guide. This is a guide that was designed to walk someone through the process of actually using the building themselves. If someone wants to have... Yes, Commissioner?
Do you have an actual diagram of the Capitol on your site?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Commissioner, we do.
Could you pull it up when you get a minute?
Yes, actually, that's actually the next item on this list. The Capitol Activity Planning Guide is designed to allow someone to walk through the process of planning a meeting, if it's a business meeting or even a political rally. This gives them their background information for that. And actually, we can scroll down here. We've got the links to ADA resources in the building, a directory of offices, so someone can get the name, the location, and the contact information for any office in the building. And here we have floor plans for the Capitol. So once someone has a location, they can see what's available, and they can navigate through the building. So this is what we've got here. Continuing on, we have an online gift shop to correspond with our gift shop out next to the kiosk. And when someone's coming to the building, we have text directions, we've got maps, and we've got parking information for once they actually arrive. So this page is basically the go-to spot. If someone's going to be coming to the building or if they wish they could come to the building, we've got our online tour and all of the resources that I outlined. Now, that is an overview of what's on our primary navigation bar. And if I can, I'll take you through a similar walkthrough on our secondary navigation bar.
Did you skip budget and tax? Or was I not paying attention?
Commissioner Wilhelms, I did not. But I can go back to that page. It was just an outline of what the Legislative Fiscal Office offers and the Legislative Revenue Office, and then it links to their individual office pages.
Can people access budget information or like the quarterly estimates from this page? Is there a link?
I just linked to the Legislative Fiscal Office, and here we've got budget reports and fiscal impact statements. Is that what you're looking for, Commissioner?
Well, that would be some of it, but I was thinking more of the quarterly revenue estimates and so forth.
I don't recall all of the items that we include, but I think we probably do.
Well, that's good. You don't have to dwell there, but it's fine.
So, Daniel, say you wanted to read a budget note on, say, the Oregon State Police budget or something of that nature. Can you find that on this site?
If I can, may I call in Mr. Bill Sweeney, who is my backup?
I just want to know how in-depth you can go, really, without belaboring it too much. But.
Of course, Mr. Chair.
Chair Wilson, Commissioner members, I'm Bill Sweeney. I work for Legislative Administration Information Systems. I'm the Publications Coordinator. If you were to go to Legislative Fiscal, mm-hmm. Why don't you go to Fiscal, and then and Legislative Revenue and Legislative Fiscal have control of what information they display and how they display it and when they display it. So if you're looking for the committee on the information on the state patrol budgets, is that right? They have their information split up in ways and means, emergency board, the audit committee, and committee information on information management and technology. Possibly if it's in there.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think when you get to the fiscal impact statements and the budget reports, it's under there. If you know the bill number that you're looking for, you can look at the entire budget report, and you'll see budget notes in there.
Representative
Mr. Chair, I believe it was House Bill 5167.
So if you click on
5167 or 5567.
You can just link right there.
The state police budget is page 10 at the bottom.
That's amazing that you would know that.
We had a discussion with the speaker yesterday over that.
You actually want the report, like the staff measure summary sort of document. So.
I assure you we won't have too many questions like this, but we just kind of wanted to have a feel for how in-depth it would get.
Under publications and staff assignments. Yeah.
What was the number?
Commissioner Krieger, what was the
number? It was either 5167 or 5567. I couldn't recall which of the two it is. It's the state police budget for.
So if you click on that 726. Yeah.
Yes.
Good. But then you're pretty good.
Also, page 10 at the bottom.
All right.
There you go.
And there it is, budget note. Well, I guess there's our answer. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Commissioner, may I continue with the search engine?
Thank you.
All right. I'll move right along. Our search engine, and during a typical session month, has got 56,000 hits, so it's also something that is used pretty frequently. And it can search through, once again, I pointed out, the legislation is all there back to 1995, and all of that is searchable, as well as the Oregon Revised Statutes and the Oregon Constitution. And I'm going to come back to that in just a moment, if I may. Next, we have the Citizen's Guide. And basically, the Citizen's Guide is designed to be a more complete tutorial to a citizen who's interested in the legislative process. It gives more details about what's available, and it also has information like how to participate, including a video on how to testify available online and a link to information on laws and lobbying in Oregon. So someone who's unfamiliar with the process can learn the background they need in order to engage. Next, we've got another link for KidStage. It's the same information that I mentioned earlier. And we have a Find Your Legislator tool. And I will demonstrate how this works once again in just a moment. And a close cousin of the Find Your Legislator tool is a Write Your Legislator tool. It allows someone to enter their address and send an email directly to their state representative and or their state senator. Next, we have the committee schedule. And on this page, we have legislative committee agendas online. And during session, this is updated about every 15 minutes. During the interim, when there's less information, it's updated roughly every hour. And we see that this was updated at 11, so just 4 minutes ago is when this was last updated. And it lists all of the agendas that have been released, including the agenda for the meeting we're in right now. Next, we have an executive appointments schedule. It just gives the schedule of when those will be happening. And we have a press releases page. This is something that I have not seen occurring very often in other legislative sites. This is open to all of legislators as well as caucus offices to post press releases that they think are important. So they're here, they're available. It's a great resource for people who are wanting to keep up on the most current information and also for news media. Next, we have office links to legislative administration, and then legislative council and all of their resources, the legislative fiscal office, which we've already visited, and the legislative revenue office, which we've also visited. Finally, we've got a site index, and the site index basically allows someone to navigate our site if they just have a topic they're looking for or information that they're not quite sure where to find. They can usually find it here under the site index. And the last item is we have a link here to the Oregon.gov site. So if someone wants to explore the resources in the executive branch, they've got a quick link over to there. Now, if I may, I would like to walk you through two short scenarios that would illustrate how our site is actually useful to someone who is, for example, new to the area.
Thank you. One brief question, and that is that when you go to Oregon.gov, is the legislature any easier to find than any other branch of government from that page?
Let's take a look. And I believe that it's available over here.
Wait, scroll down. It was right there in the middle.
Scroll down?
Yeah. In the middle.
Okay. Yeah, so it's sort of easier to find.
It takes its position along with the lottery and road cam. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Of course, Mr. Chair.
I just have a question. You mentioned that you had some idea of the traffic that was generated by the website, but can you monitor within the website what areas are being used the most so we can understand where the traffic is being generated from?
That is not information that I generate personally. Rich, do you know the infrastructure for that?
Richard Burns, are you talking about where in Oregon that was initiated?
No, like what parts of the site are being most heavily used?
Which parts of the site? That is possible for us to do that. We have some tools that will allow us to go in and do analysis of the various traffic. We haven't used that very much in the past. We do overall statistics, and from time to time we do take a look at what's being hit, but we don't do it on a regular basis. But we can do that if that's of use.
Well, just from the feedback that you receive from citizens, what do you perceive to be the most heavily used aspect of the site?
Feeling for that? Commissioner Wilson, Chair Wilson, Commissioner Burns, the bills and laws really are most heavily used. The bills and laws information pages, right. And those, especially obviously during session, but those are the most frequent places on our website that people go. Thank you.
Is there any particular reason why the legislature doesn't have a higher profile on the Oregon.gov site on the main page? What would you conjecture about that? It seems to me that it should be easier to find than almost anything else there, especially when the legislature's in session.
Yeah, I agree with you, Chair Wilson, wholeheartedly. That's a decision of DAS, and they actually have on their site a spot for the top five ranking pages, and we're often on that, especially during session.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a question we would probably have to take up with them.
Yeah, good. I'm glad we put that on record. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I have a question. with regards to the website management, who develops the policy? I see you have a governance board with regards to the IT technology, but who actually establishes the policy of what will be on the website and what will not be on the website? Who's the one that's responsible for that, for managing that?
Sorry. Commissioner Ramirez, that we have an IT governance board, and we'll be talking about that some later, and the IT governance board helps us with some issues like this. We also, though, have two groups that have been set up in the past to help us with the website, and those groups are composed from representatives around the building, from each of the offices around the building, and I guess I'd say most notably the caucus offices, so that they all have input. And anytime we make any substantial changes to our website, our pattern is to get that group together and talk about what are the mechanics of the new content, how does it fit in, and how do people access it. And so that's our normal mechanism for doing that. We don't meet frequently with that group because the site now is pretty well built out, but when there's new things, then we tend to get that group together.
So IT establishes the policy?
No, the group is actually composed of representatives from all of the caucus offices and the other business areas. So the information technology people form the group, I guess. We actually call the group together and schedule a meeting, but we don't do that. We believe that is really a business function of the legislature, and so IS does not set that policy.
So I'm still a little lost here. So who actually makes the decision?
The decision is actually made by that group.
Okay.
It's a web. It's called a web change control group. Is the title of the committee. And so the people that are on that committee that represent all the business areas actually decide, yes, this fits here, and okay, it should go on the website.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other commission member want to ask a question, including Commissioner Garber?
I would like to ask one question, if I could.
Go ahead.
I would, just in light of our earlier discussion today, I'd be curious if we talked about the obstacles to providing interactivity via more traditional television, and I'd just be curious if we think that the ultimate way to go is via the web as far as providing interactivity in a live setting.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garber, I believe in the long term that will be true. When I look down the road, I think that there's a place both for television and for the Internet in the long term. I think television offers some things that the Internet doesn't, and so I think it's going to be a presence forever. But the Internet, I think, is the growth area for communication of virtually all kinds, and I think it'll be a tool that we use for communicating in meetings like this, in small subgroups, in large groups. But it's going to take several years, I think, for the tools to develop and mature before that's, you know, we're really able to do everything that we'd like to do with it. So I guess I think there's a place for both television and Internet in the future.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner Wilhelms.
Are you going to get to the items under the search engine more than you have already? Because I specifically want you to show us how this Write Your Legislator item works.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Wilhelms, yes, we will.
Okay.
All right. Go ahead.
Very good. Mr. Chair, on scenario number one, let's say I just moved to the state of Oregon. I came from Colorado, and I moved to Monmouth, Oregon, and I'm new to the area. And as a new resident of the state, I realize that I know very little about the legislative process in Oregon, and I need to find out. So I do a quick web search, and that takes me to this site, Welcome to the Oregon State Legislature. And while I'm here, I immediately can just kind of read through this top section. This welcoming section gives an outline of how many state representatives we have, how many state senators we have, and just kind of an outline of what a legislative session is. At the bottom, I want to learn more, so I can click on a link. I want to learn more, and I'm linked to how an idea becomes a law. It's a little bit more detailed outline of the legislative process, and you'll see that it's also available in Spanish for our Spanish-speaking folks. Now that I have learned more, I realize how important it is to know who my legislators are. And Chair Wilhelms, here we come to Find Your Legislator. I see the link there, and I come here, and I'm prompted to enter my physical address. So I'll enter my new address in Monmouth, if I can remember it. And I submit my physical address. And what this system does is it will return both my federal legislators and their contact information, as well as my state legislators and their contact information. So I learned that my state senator is Senator Winters, and my state representative is Representative Berger. And I'm given contact information, as well as links to send an email directly to each of the members, and a link to their legislative website. And if I may, I'd like to take you to Representative Berger's legislative website as an example. This is another thing that I think is relatively unique to the Oregon legislative site, is that we have individual pages for each legislator. They'll all have some certain common elements. We'll have their party affiliation, primary city they represent, their name, photo, and the members can choose to submit text for a welcoming text. And they'll have some other common elements. For example, they'll have a biography page. They'll have a committees page that links to the committees that they're members of, and that's updated continuously, I think every 24 hours. They have a news page where they can post press releases. another link to their email, a map of their district, so someone can get, if they're not sure where they're at, they can get a better idea. Once again, here's another copy of their contact information. So contact information for legislators is pretty ubiquitous across the site. They can offer other things. For example, Representative Berger wanted to have a weekly newsletter, so she had this added, and she also wanted to offer some links that she thought people in her district would find useful, so she added that. So this is a typical legislator page, and if I may, I'll just take a quick trip over to another one. This is Representative Smith, and you see that there's quite a lot of freedom to adjust what these pages look like for the member, but they have the same elements. She's got a biography, a news page. She's chosen to add a photo gallery with photos from her district and from legislative meetings. So I am new to Oregon. I now understand the legislative process and kind of a big picture idea. I know who my legislators are, and I can contact them. So with this site, I've been able to engage myself in the system. Let's say maybe 2 weeks down the road, I'm reading this fascinating article about cattle. And it is in reference to a House Bill 2656. And since I've come here to get my information before, I come here again. And if I didn't have a bill number, I could use a search engine, and I could search right here. I'd select what I'm searching, the 2005 legislative measures, because I know it's a current measure. And from the newspaper article that I read, and I can just say it's cattle, relating to cattle. And this is what the search engine would return. And here at the first is a link to House Bill 2656, and I can read the text of what I'm looking for. But in this case, I have the bill number. So I can go to Bills and Laws, and under the heading of Bills, which comes right up, I know that, once again, it's a current measure, so I can go to the 2005 session. And there's multiple ways to access the text of a measure. I can follow these links to follow, just following the numbers to get to the full text. Or I can use search for a specific measure number, which is what I'll do today since I have House Bill number, 2656, excuse me. 2656, I select the type of measure and search. And what this takes me to is not only links to every version of the bill, but I also have, of course, just the relating to clause and then the legislative history of the bill. And it outlines basically all the committee meetings this bill was heard in and what the votes were. And at the bottom, we even have an effective date. So that's a brief outline of how someone might access their website to get information on a particular bill. Mr. Chair, commissioners, do you have further questions?
I have maybe just a couple, but let me ask the panel questions. Representative Krieger.
What was the first year this was available to the public? This not exactly what you got, but basic information. Because was it Mr. Wilhelms? Was it 97 when they first bought computers for legislators?
No, we had them before that.
Well, some of you had them, but when the state actually paid for them. In other words, I got two now. I bought one. The state bought one, but because I can remember talking to Representative Schroeder, and he was talking about when they didn't have any, and on a big issue that would come up, you would have some phone calls and maybe 10, 15, or 20 letters. Today, with this type of access, when a controversial issue comes up, or one that involves especially principal positions that people have, any lobbyist can push a button and hit 20,000 members they have in Oregon, and the next day I'll have 500, 600, 700 emails on that subject. And the change, what that has made, is access to the public. And of course, it's difficult to read 600 emails a day when they come in, even if you've got a staff person. So more access, more information is good, but if we're going to be contacted by tens of thousands of people, we're going to have more staff to cover just that alone. We're generating more work in our offices the more of this there is. And that's not bad necessarily. We need to be aware that that's going to happen.
Thank you. I appreciate that. capacity of the site. When someone is logging on to listen to something that's going on live or to view it on video, how many people can do that at once without people getting knocked off or having incomplete transmissions? I know that's really not your area, but have you heard?
Chair Wilson, right now we have licenses for 100 streams, so we can have 100 people, and the 101st person then would be knocked off.
Really? Wow.
And we do monitor that as we go through session particularly. We've hit that limit a few times. We don't hit it very often, and that's an indication that we're sized pretty well at the moment. Mm-hmm. But when we get things like opening ceremonies or particularly controversial issues, then mm-hmm. on those days we go up to the top.
All right, okay, thank you. All right, I guess that's all I have.
I have one question. The right, your legislator, now I caught the piece about how you could get their email, but I want to specifically see the right, your legislator piece.
The right, your legislator piece. Basically, it has required information, but it works very similarly to the find your legislator. You notice I entered a physical address, and here you enter your name and, once again, your physical address, and the system would automatically determine who your state legislators are. So by providing this information, your name and then your physical address, a return email, then you include a message, and then at the top you select your state senator or your state representative, who you want to receive the message, one or the other or both.
Then does it become an email then?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So it's no different than if you would have used that link that you had to send an email under the Find Your Legislator. Somewhere along the way I saw a link that you had where you could send an email message
yes.
to your. So you end up doing the same thing, whether you do it that way or whether you do it this way.
Commissioner, yes, that's correct.
Okay.
All right, any further questions for Rich and Daniel? Commissioner Garber, and then we'll go to Commissioner Burns.
Okay, that's fine. I was just curious if we have any statistical compilation on similar to what we had on the television. How many Oregonians actually have computer access right now?
Commissioner Garber, we have been actually looking for some statistics on that recently, and I believe that the number in Oregon is up in the high 60% range. 60-70% of citizens actually have access to the internet. When you talk about high-speed internet, it's closer to half that. So roughly it would be about 30-35% of people have high-speed internet access. So if you're looking at can people listen to web audio, virtually anyone can do that that has an internet access. If you want to watch the video, you really need to have the high speed to make it worthwhile at all. So that's
sure.
the kind of limitation there.
Thank you. I did just want to say that I use the website all the time, and it's a tremendous resource. And I think if more people knew about it, they would go there. It saves tons of time when you're trying to do research on legislation.
Thank you. Commissioner Burns?
On those days that we have exceeded our capacity on the streaming capability, do we have any way of monitoring how many citizens or how many individuals are knocked off the top? Because I see those days as being the greatest opportunity we have for outreach for average citizens. So do we have any idea who we're missing and what capacity we would need to expand it to include them?
Mr. Burns, no, we don't. We don't know how many people. We just know that we've reached the limit. And I can tell you on those days, the typical pattern is we reach the limit and then it hovers and goes up and down a little bit throughout the day. So in general, I believe people can wait a little bit and then get in. But we don't have any way to measure how many people were knocked off. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
I'm glad you asked that question, Commissioner Burns. It is, I think, one of the potentially most exciting ways of people plugging into what's happening inside this building. I want to ask you about cost on this, to add additional streams. Do you have any idea? I mean, are we talking a real expensive proposition to double that, as an example?
Sorry, Chair Wilson, off the top of my head, I don't know that number, but we're talking thousands of dollars. I don't think major tens of thousands of dollars to increase our license, but we're talking thousands of dollars to increase the limit. We haven't checked that for a while. Yeah. We do check it going into each session to see where are we and how are things, you know, what would the expense be, but we haven't checked it recently.
Is this part of the DAS budget?
No, this is part of our budget. All of this happens directly through the legislative website, so we pay the licensing fees for the streams.
Right.
DAS does some similar functions on their side as well, but they handle their own licensing at this point.
Okay. Great. Any further? All right, gentlemen, thank you. Appreciate your time and expertise today.
Appreciate that.
Thank you.
And then Rich has a presentation about technology.
Okay. All right, Rich, you're with us still.
Okay, I have. I'd like to talk with you about information technology projects, and I know we're a little bit behind schedule, so I'll ask you to let me know when you've had enough, and we'll just go forth with other things.
Thank you.
But we have many information technology projects that are on the slate right now, and many of those actually will expand citizen access to the legislature. And so I kind of want to highlight a few of those as I talk. Also want to talk briefly about information technology governance. We kind of mentioned that earlier, and I want to just briefly touch on that just so you understand how the process works here of getting projects done. First of all, I'd like to talk just very briefly about the services that Information Systems offers here in the building. So if you look at your handout, the first page there kind of gives you an idea of services, and I won't read all of these to you, but I'll just give you kind of the highlights. The first of these, we have built and managed the legislative website and the intranet, and the intranet is essentially a website that is used internally in the building. So we have a lot of things that are used by staff on that site, but the general public doesn't have access. And as we've mentioned throughout, I think the website, the legislative website, is a very powerful means of reaching the citizens. next group of things we do is help desk and consulting. So we assist legislators and staff members with virtually any issue they have with their computer systems throughout the Capitol. And if you notice over on the right side, we also do that for members when they're in their district offices. So we provide support to them when they go out and they work in their district offices for 18 months or so. The middle group of services we provide have to do with system development. We have a full group of people that actually do analysis of business processes, design and building then of systems to be used here at the legislature. And we've done that for several years. We also maintain then all of those systems. It turns out when you build a system, it's not really done. It always, you know, gets changed over the years. So we also do that process of enhancing and maintaining systems. Next group of things is technology infrastructure. We maintain the infrastructure, and what I mean by that is when people work on their computers here in the Capitol, they don't see all of the servers and the network equipment and all the software that maintains that entire network. We do that. We maintain all that software and that hardware, and that's a fairly major task for us to keep all of that working. And lastly, we provide training on the things that we do here in the Capitol, and we do some of that also over the internet for people in their districts as well. Yeah, I'd also like then to just jump into information technology governance before we look at the project list. If you look at the second page in your handout, it kind of gives you a diagram of what the IT governance board here looks like and what the functions are of this group. If you look at the diagram, our IT governance board is composed of representatives from all the major offices in the legislature. So all the caucus offices are represented here in the Senate and the House, the Secretary of the Senate, Chief Clerk of the House, and then the manager of legislative administration, fiscal counsel, and revenue are also on the IT governance board. The main function of the board is to look over all of the IT projects that we undertake here in the legislature and to oversee the planning and prioritization, which is an important thing, and also then the execution. So as we complete our projects, the board is helping us by looking over our shoulder and making sure that it's working the way that it should work. one of the reasons that the board is there is to provide business direction on all information technology projects. We want to ensure that anything that we do in information technology relates directly to the business of the legislature, and that's a very important function of the group. We also use this group as a forum, really, for discussing information technology ideas and new things that are coming along, new technologies, and also for strategic planning kinds of things. And during the interim, this group meets monthly to review what's going on and talk about new projects. We're just about, we've had our first meeting this interim. We're going to meet again in November to take a look at this entire list of projects that we'll talk about in a minute, and prioritize those and decide what we're going to work on for the next two-year period. One reason that the board is very important is that we do have a tremendous list of project requests. We have right now on the list about 116 project requests. Last biennium, just to give you an idea of how many we can finish, we finished about 50. So it's very important that this group help us prioritize what we're going to work on, because we know we're not going to finish the list. We, in information systems, as anywhere else in the world, I suppose, we have limited budget and we have limited people. So we can only do a certain amount, and this group helps us decide what's most important for the legislature to get done.
Okay. Are these listed in any particular order?
I'm sorry?
Are these listed in any particular order?
They are listed in order. The list is broken into three main sections. If you look at the column there called project type, the first one is what I would call public access. And I did this just for this meeting so that we could have you take a look at those projects that have a public access component.
Mm-hmm.
Following that, we'll look at some that are just what I'd call legislative business, and then there are a few projects, well, a lot of projects on here that we'll call infrastructure. So I'll kind of give you some examples of each of those. I won't go through the whole list, but just hit a few to give you a flavor of what we're about. If you look on the first page there, then, right in the middle of the page is a project called Public Measure Tracking. And we, as some of you know, we have a very good measure tracking system that we use inside the Capitol for all the staff members and legislators here. And it was designed specifically for the legislature here, and it's a very powerful tool for monitoring what's going on with legislation throughout the session. We've had a lot of requests from the public, from lobbyists, from legislators to make that available to the general public. And this project that's the purpose of this project. And I have to say, though, that we can't use our in-house system, because it assumes that you have great knowledge of the legislative process. So we basically have to redesign the system so that a citizen could, as was pointed out earlier, you know, some people don't know what a third reading calendar is. So we'd have to make sure that this particular system would be very user-friendly. You'd have to be able to use it with no knowledge of the legislature, basically. The other thing that we'd have to be very careful about with this particular project is we can't use the same exact database that we use as for our production systems inside the building, because when we allow the public to access that data, we have the potential that they could alter the data and bring the legislative process down. So we will end up having to build a separate database. It'll be essentially a copy of the production database, but we have to have a secure environment if we open this up to the general public. The next project there is one that we kind of alluded to earlier and some other folks have talked about, and that is website redesign. And our website was built back in roughly the 1996 time frame. And believe it or not, the technology since that time has changed a great deal. And so we use the best tools available at the time, but it's time for us to go back and revisit that and use new tools. So we primarily want to do this from a technology standpoint. It would allow us to put a whole lot more things out on the site automatically, for instance, so we wouldn't have to have so much intervention to get new data out on the site.
Mr. Chair. What determines the level of risk on here? I mean, some are low, high, medium. What does that mean?
The level of risk
actually is at this level, when we're working with projects at this level, information systems kind of does this and says, how big do I think that is? We take a look at the overall scale of the project, who would be involved, what is the topic of it. There are a whole lot of factors that we look at, and, you know, is it data that we already have, or do we have to create new data? Can we use existing systems to do it? And so based upon all of those factors, then we assign a risk of high, medium, or low at this point. When we actually start up a project, we actually do a whole lot more detailed risk analysis and try to identify all the factors.
Well, I guess I still don't get it. I mean, what usually a high risk means is there's a high penalty if it goes bad or something like that. Is that what we're talking about here?
It is what we're talking about.
About money? I mean, the loss of...
In some cases, it is money. In other cases, it's things like we're using a brand new technology in this particular project. So if we're using a brand new technology, then there's a higher risk that the project won't complete successfully because we're not familiar with that technology. If it's one that we use in many other areas, then the risk would be low in that case because we already know that the project will sail right through. So that's one of the areas where it would be... That would... You know, tell us what the risk is, and there are many things that we look at in that regard as well.
Chairman Wilson.
Yes.
I'm going to have to leave, so I just wanted to let you know I'm going to hang up now. But I sorry again, I couldn't be there in person, and that I have to leave a little early. But I'll look forward to the next meeting, and I appreciate all the information this morning.
Great, Mark. Thank you for making yourself available today.
Thank you.
It's Commissioner Garber bowing out here, and he'll probably be with us next time. Live and direct. Go ahead.
Okay, just one final comment on website redesign as a project. Even though we would come at this probably from a technology standpoint, as was mentioned earlier, we would take the opportunity to look at the way that the site is formatted and how you can get at information. And we think there are probably better ways to do some of those things now to make it easier for the citizens to navigate through the page. So we would try to update it in that regard as well. The next project you see there is called Recording and Archiving, and as many of you know, the legislature is required to do audio recordings of all proceedings, and we are currently doing that with audio cassette tapes, which is technology that is, I would not call current, have been around for a long time, and those audio tapes, when after they're they're kept at the legislature for some period of time, and then they go to the State Archives building, and they're kept there. It's intended to be a permanent record of legislative proceedings. Archives has indicated to us that that's not a very good way to do it, and they would really like to find another better way to do it. It turns out that the lifespan of those audio cassette tapes is not that much longer than 20 years. So we already have some of those tapes that are deteriorating and are not usable. And believe it or not, storage is a problem as well. They have got an immense amount of space at Archives dedicated to storage of audio tapes. So one of the things that we will do in this project is look at how do we do the recordings. We'll look at, but we're also recording, as you know, in web audio. So we have another means already of recording those legislative meetings. So we will try to combine all of the ways that we record, whether it's audio, video, tapes, or whatever, into one integrated fashion so that we can capture audio and video data one way. And one thing that would allow us to do then, too, is use that audio and video in different ways in other systems. So, for instance, if you were on our website and wanted to look down at a bill and then go to the committee and listen to the testimony about that bill, we could do that if we had a good integrated system here. So that's kind of the direction we're going on that project.
Rich, just for your own comfort here, I think we'll aim to kind of come in for a soft landing here on your testimony about 10 minutes before the hour. Okay? Give you an idea of where we are.
I'll pace myself there and we'll get there. Let's talk then, go to page 2 if you would. There's a project at the bottom here called Capital Wireless Access, and this has been alluded to a couple of times earlier today. People have indicated that wireless access in the Capitol would be a very valuable thing for citizens, and I think we heard the press say from the press's standpoint as well. So we've had a lot of requests over the past, I guess I'd have to say,
up to 4 years for wireless here in the capital, throughout the capital. So we've already started taking a look at what technology would be best to be used in a building like this. This is a sort of unique building with all the marble, and because it's so old. So we're already doing a study on that. This particular project would be to actually implement a wireless system. And I have to say that to you right now that the cost of this particular project at this time will be very high. And while many people are familiar with home wireless, and it is inexpensive and it is easy to use, it's a very different thing to put it up in a building where you'd want to be able to move throughout the entire building and have your wireless be seamless throughout the building. We'd have to have a great deal of security, again, on a wireless system here in the Capitol to protect our data. And perhaps the biggest problem we have for wireless is a wiring problem. And that may not seem like the right thing, but it's actually true. Many of the cable trays throughout the Capitol are full at the moment, and we can't really... In fact, some are over capacity, and we can't really add any additional wiring there. If we're going to put wireless throughout the building, we have to wire to what are called wireless access points. And we'd have to wire virtually throughout the entire building in these cable trays to do that. And we can't do that at the moment without totally revamping the way that the cable runs in the building.
Everything in the cable trays currently use? Everything in the cable trays currently in use? Nothing to add there?
I'm sorry, I can't hear.
About the cable trays, mm-hmm. And you mentioned that the cable trays are capacity right now. Is there any unused or dead cable in those trays?
Chair Wilson, there is a great deal of unused cable in those trays, but we are unable to just go pull that cable out because of the fear that we will destroy the cables that we actually want to use. Mm-hmm. We still have cables throughout the building for our old mainframe system. These are coax cables, large cables, and there's a great deal of that spread throughout the building. And it's kind of mixed in similar areas with other cabling. Mm-hmm. And I should say that it's not all areas of the Capitol that are totally full. It's just certain areas, mm-hmm. but it's around the entire Capitol. There are certain spots around the whole building. So we had intended to address this in a facilities project that I'm sure you'll hear about later. There's a project called the Wings Remodel, where we had done some planning for that, and part of the planning was to redo the cabling throughout the entire wings. From my own perspective, the same thing needs to happen in what we call the old building, the core building, because it's got the same problems, and if we want to wire the chambers, for instance, for using wireless in the chambers, then we need to wire into those areas as well. Mm-hmm. So that's... I was planning to talk about that later, but that's a major obstacle to us right now in proceeding with some of our technology projects, is the facility just is not in any shape right now for us to do that. Again, it would be very expensive for us to proceed.
Sure.
Mr. Wilhelm.
How high is very high with regard to cost?
In terms of the wireless project, I think we have we did some estimates last January, and I'll recall these off the top of my head, but I think the cost to do the wireless itself is in the range of $250,000 for all of the things that are to do the entire capital. The total cost, including the wiring, is upwards of $800,000 or $900,000, so it's a great deal of money to go in and redo the cabling throughout the building. And that's not doing it all. That's doing only those areas we'd need to do for that particular function. And one difficult thing in this area, too, is if we went to do that right now, then if we do it before we do the wings remodel project, then when we do the wings remodel project, we'll end up redoing some of that cabling as well for other things that we'll do. We'll be looking at telephones and many other things that are involved in cabling. So that project is really critical to, you know, moving forward with technology in several areas. I'd like to talk briefly about...
We have a follow-up here.
At the risk of asking a question to which I do not want to receive an answer, has anything occurred recently on the ethics question that... was asked during the last session with regard to wireless and the access by all of us and the use by any of us for personal affairs, personal matters. There was a big question over if we could put this in and expect to be able to control what traffic occurred on it. And I know you were involved in that to some extent. Has anything further occurred? Has that question ever been answered? Is there a technology that can be used to solve that problem?
Commissioner Wilhelms, at the risk of going beyond where I should go, as far as I know, there is no definitive answer to that, but we have talked in terms of two different kinds of wireless access in the building. And if we put up a wireless network for legislators with public dollars and it's intended for legislative use, then that particular type of scenario raises ethical issues. If we put up a wireless system that is intended for use by the general public, then conceptually, anyone can use that network for any purpose. And the primary purpose of, you know, people accessing the wireless network would be internet access, and from there you can do a number of things. So I think the ethical question there is a whole different question. And I think that I'm not the person to answer, what are the ethics there, but there need to be further discussions, I believe, on that particular front.
But there is an out. That's my comment anyway. The latter of the two makes sense. That's good.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Commissioner Burns.
It seems like we're putting an exceedingly high burden on ourselves to try and make the entire building wireless. Have we thought about just creating a few specific hotspots, like for instance down in the cafe or, you know, in the rotunda area, or just a few places? Because it seems like there would be a lot of arbitrary use of hotspots if we tried to wire the entire building. Would that minimize the cost in a significant way if we just had a few select spots?
Yes, Commissioner Burns, that's possible and it is true. At the same time we did our estimates last January, we did look at that very scenario to see if, you know, could we put some maybe on various floors in each wing and maybe in public areas such as the corridor out in front of the hearing rooms. And it does reduce the cost significantly because then we're limiting the wiring that we have to deal with, if you will, and we can choose the spots that that we could put that into. But it doesn't really address the broad needs. I mean, it would at least provide some wireless in you know some places in the capital, but it doesn't address all of the broad needs that everyone wants to have. So, but it does minimize the cost. Yes.
Thank you. Okay, got about five more minutes.
Okay, I'll be judicious in selecting my project. If you turn to page 3, I would like to talk about one project on here, and that's our bill drafting project at the top of the page. This is really the last project in a program that we've been working on for several years, our technology transition program. And we have been migrating, I guess, off of a mainframe system that was installed here back in the early 80s. And it was recognized as early as 1994 that system was not working anymore and we really needed to move into a different area of technology. Basically, a lot of the software that was used on that system was unsupported by that time. So we had great risk if one of those systems failed, we may not be able to get it fixed. So in 1999, we started a program to move off of the mainframe and build new systems, all new systems using mainstream technology, current technology, and build a common database so that we could have a better platform for building all the applications that we'd like to. If we have shared data, then we can do a whole lot more things on the website and between systems. So we've been working on that for the last few years. This is the last project, and we, as you may know, this is funded for this current biennium through a bonding mechanism. COP funds are actually being used for this. And we expect this to be about a 30-month project and will be completed about 6 months after the 2007 session. So the first time the new bill drafting system would be used would be in the 2009 legislative session. But this is a very important thing for us. This has been another one of those stumbling blocks. I guess I alluded to the building is something that's kind of standing in the way of new technology solutions at the legislature. This has been that same thing. So it's very important for us to complete this process. It opens up the door for us when we have a single
unified database to do a whole lot more things for the business units in the legislature.
I have a question. With and we'll be discussing this as we get into the process here with regards to security down the road here. But how do you support the infrastructure here, say, key card access? Is that under IT or is that somewhere else? Help me understand that piece of it. I kind of scan through all these projects. There's nothing mentioned in all of these projects. So help me understand that.
Sure, Commissioner Ramirez. We don't do that in information technology. Herb Colom in the facilities area does handle the key cards, and he's got a security system for the physical plant here, and he manages that whole thing. So I think he's the right guy to talk about that. We do plan to work closely with him on expanding that throughout the building. We'd like to use that key card system for access to our facilities as well, to the computer room and others. But he's I'm sure you'll be talking with Herb, and that's a question for Herb.
Okay.
So I'd like to just touch briefly, see I'm just about out of time, but one more project that I think you'll hear a lot about is a project called Chamber Automation, and that would be using, for instance, wireless in the chambers so that members could have intelligence on their desks. There's been a lot of discussion about that over the years. It's been raised as a potential project. We've looked at the costs and the feasibility of doing that in the past, and it was decided not to address that until our technology transition program was done, so that we had better means of doing that. But I think that's one thing that will now start coming up again, is providing better intelligence in the chamber so that people can not use so much paper, do things more. We would actually have better control, I think, of the process in the chambers and allow people access to a greater set of information when they're there. One thing that I have to point out, though, is that this is not as simple as providing laptops for members. It really has to be combined with writing a whole lot of software to make the information available to legislators and to let the chief clerk and the secretary of Senate control the process in a fashion that that they need to make the process work well. So anyway, that's on our list, and it'll have more discussion this time.
Where is it on the list?
Commissioner Wilhelms, it's not in any particular position. It's just out there as a consideration at this point. We haven't gone through the prioritization process.
Page 4.
It's currently on page 3. It's just sitting here. But this is not a prioritized list. That doesn't indicate. So given that I'm out of time, I've kind of hit some of the highlights. I guess the one last thing that I'd like to add is that if you'd like additional information about technology planning for the legislatures, there's another document that I think could be used, and that is the Legislative Administration Strategic Plan, which Dave Henderson worked with us to create about 4 years ago, and then we've updated it every couple of years. And it's got a section on information technology. It has good information about our thinking at those times about what's out there in the future, what could we do better. And it's intended to be a long-term document, not something that we're doing tomorrow, but what do we see when we look 5 and 10 years down the road? So we could make that available to you if you're interested in that document as well.
Rich, before you go, one thing that I want to ask, and that is I would like your opinion on how this list of requests fits with this subcommittee and the larger commission. There are those things that fall within our purview, obviously, and one of those is technology here in this building. And so with that said, I'd just like to ask, how can we help on specific projects? I think as we look at this list, there are going to be some that we look at as a subcommittee and want to present to the full commission as something that, this ought to be done. Let's do this. So how do we fit with the aims here?
Chair Wilson, I guess I'd say the working closely with the IT Governance Board would be a good thing. That's, as I mentioned earlier, that's our normal mechanism for prioritizing and deciding what we get done. But to be real frank, many of the projects on here that are important to the legislature in the long term cost a great deal of money. They're very, very expensive projects, some of them. And so I guess my personal opinion would be a role that the commission could play is identifying those that you think are critical to the long-term betterment of the organization, and let it work with legislative leadership on identifying those and proposing that those get special attention. Mm-hmm. Because I think we tend to go along. In some instances, we work on what's hot today. You know, what's the day to day, and we don't necessarily address the long term issues. We try to do that, but sometimes that gets pushed aside. Mm-hmm. But the commission, in my view, your view is a long term view, and so that I think you could help us focus on things that are really going to help the public, help with legislative business operations, and streamline those. And lend your weight to the IT Governance Board.
Great, thank you, Rich. Appreciate that. Any final questions? Okay, thanks again for your time today. Appreciate that very much. We're going to alter our schedule here for just a moment. It makes, I think, more sense to take public testimony now before we take our tour. And so I think we'll move into the public comment phase here. And we have one who has signed up, and I don't know if there's any other that is here to testify who is not on the list, but I'd like to have Peggy Lynch come up. And Peggy is representing League of Women Voters of Oregon and herself today. Hi again, Peggy. It's been
Hi.
Some time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. Peggy Lynch. I do serve on the League of Women Voters of Oregon Action Committee, and I hope that you have somewhere in your packet a letter that the League sent you. And particularly since you're talking about citizen access very directly today and the mechanisms to do that, I wanted to share with you that the League felt this was such an important issue that this last session, they actually created a citizen access position within our action committee to focus on citizen access. And so it is of critical importance to the League. We believe that the public's business needs to be done in the public. And so there are, although you have talked a great deal about technology, and certainly that's of help in letting people know what is happening, it's really important that you focus on interactive access and not just providing information. The web is great. Any of us who follow the legislature, I'm sure, must use the web because it is a quick and easy way to find information. But, Mr. Chair, in particular, your question about the state police budget and a budget note was very, very helpful and illustrative, I hope, to you of the problems involved. I mean, I could get that bill number up and I could see the text of the bill number, but to find the important information, your administrator, your commission administrator, had to actually say, and this is where you find it. And so only an insider would be able to do that. So working to try to make the web more people-friendly or easily understood, as Mark Garber mentioned about the third readings and knowing what that interaction is. A couple of other comments. I have to say that I am disappointed that this committee did not have a few minutes this morning to talk about the broader Frohnmayer points and the 21st legislature issue. As we have been following the other committees, three other committees, I guess, have met, and they have had that sort of in-committee conversation about the broad issues that this commission will go forward with. And I think it was helpful for the individual committee members in smaller settings to have that conversation amongst themselves as you go into the November 7th larger 30-member commission meeting. So just as I'm reading through my list of notes, as you talk about media and connection with all of Oregon, I don't know that I've heard today, but the Ontario area is almost isolated from any Oregon media information. Almost everything now comes from Idaho, and as the last time I was there, I understood that even the Portland TV station that used to be on cable in that area is now no longer there. So that section, that small section of Oregon, may receive little or no information about what's happening in Oregon, but they know a heck of a lot about what's happening in Idaho. So you need to be aware of it. I am concerned about the discussion about the digital TV. I think it's frankly unrealistic to expect that in 5 years all consumer televisions will be totally digital available. I just replaced my 1979 TV. Certainly parking is an issue when you're a person coming to the Capitol. That is always an issue. I have no idea how to suggest you handle that. It is helpful that people understand how the system works, and certainly knowing about the parking passes if you're going to be here all day. Either that or knowing you need to bring your quarters when you come. And lastly, Peter Wong made a comment that I think is extremely important as you talk about citizen access. Yes, video conferencing is wonderful. Yes, the Internet is great. But the truth is, the real business of this legislature occurs amongst people. It's relationships among legislators. It's a relationship between legislators and their constituents. It's relationships between legislators and constituents and lobbyists, and you can name all of the different subsets or interest groups. And so, although electronics and technology is wonderful, we have to have the ability for people to interact interpersonally, one-on-one, to learn. The comment about the caucus opening, because what he said, and I don't have a particular position, and neither does the League on that, I don't think, specifically, but his comment behind it was important. He said, the reason I liked it open was because I understood the reasons behind the actions that took place up there. And that's what people need to know. They need, and in order to participate, they need to understand a broader set of issues than just this is the bill number and gee, it sounds good or it sounds bad, but that these are the interconnections with why it might or might not be supported by someone. So, well, anyway, thank you for your time. I appreciated it. I did get the web presentation is done in another committee, so I now have a double dose of that. But most of it was new information for me, and I found it fascinating. And I appreciate the fact that you offered it a public comment opportunity.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that. Any questions, comments for Peggy? All right. Thank you. Appreciate your appearance today. Okay. Committee, I think we're going to move on to a tour. And so, Marjorie, I don't know. We need to come back and actually go through the adjournment process. How do you want to?
Yes, please. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, why don't we go on tour? Bill Groves from Legislative Media will take us around to the Legislative Media facilities downstairs and to the press room. And then we'll have to come back up and adjourn the committee.
Fine. We'll come back and after that tour and have any discussion we need to have, any observations you want to put on record, and then adjourn at that point.
Okay.
We'll come back to order. Before we adjourn, we have just taken our tour. Any comments, thoughts about what we have just seen? All right. Well, if not, let me just thank everybody who's participated today. I appreciate your involvement. We want to begin to think about our December subcommittee meeting, and we have three dates, and you have that in your material, and I think I'll have Marjorie just poll you all via email or phone to find out what dates seem to work best for all involved. I think, apart from any feedback from yourself, what I'd like to do in the next subcommittee hearing is to come back and readdress a couple of points here, perhaps especially relating to the physical plant here itself and the challenges that it represents to various technologies and the improvements thereof. And then just begin to bridge into security before too long. But I think we need to understand the building more. And Raul has made that thought known to me, and I think that's a good thought. So we'll study the facility itself, and we were not able to get some of the facilities people here today, but I trust we will for the next meeting. So any other thoughts or comments about process here?
One comment about process, sure. from the full commission co-chair standpoint. We talked earlier about trying to have the committees dispense with the low-hanging fruit early on if they can. I'm not saying that you should divert a substantial amount of time over on those things, but those items that could be taken care of, accomplished administratively, for example, by legislative administration, right. If we could allow maybe 30 minutes on our agenda to discuss some of those and actually take action and make recommendations out of the committee, it'll just help clear the deck, and it'll also give the rest of the process the opportunity to get busy.
Great.
and we'll accomplish some of those easy things much earlier, sure. I believe. So right. All I'm saying is I don't think we should just shove them all aside until we get through with the big ticket items, that maybe we just allow 15 or 30 minutes on the agenda to take care of those. I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, be happy to do that. Thank you.
Is there any possibility for us to have a brief discussion about Dave Perlmeyer's comments or his letter at in the next meeting?
Sure, that would be fine. If you would request that, we'd be happy to do it.
That would be good for us to.
Great.
I mean, obviously, our conversation won't be anything like, I think, the other committees, because I think we're going to be focusing on different elements
right.
of it, but I do think it's important for us to have that broader conversation.
Sounds fine. We'll do that. Okay, without anything else, committee is adjourned.